Process initiated. One zero zero one.
I have received initiation protocols. I will now proceed with mission objective Delta
Delta Taylor
VEDD.
initialized.
Delta Taylor Omega Sigma Beta Fish.
Beta Fish Taylor 1001 activate.
Confirm reception of download. Bidi bidi
Download
bidi.
confirmed. Hey, Daryl! He answered, but he's not there. He's probably taking his shit.
Om activate. He grabbed the steel bars and said, "Om activate."
Yes.
I hear him rifling
He's
through
shuffling.
the
He's
comic
probably putting
drawers.
some pants on or something.
No, I was taking them all.
I'm taking them off.
There you go. That now you're ready.
How's it going?
Good, good.
Oh. Yeah, I had jeans on briefly this morning because it was a little cold out, but I switched it up to shorts.
Had my first cup of coffee. I'm so happy.
I just took a sip of some iced coffee.
Oh my God, I was out of this. I had to go to the store to get some. I thought I was gonna die.
I saw you were out of K-cups.
Yeah, I found out. I realized that last night.
Did you go out and get more K-cups, or you just went out and got coffee?
I got K-cups and coffee.
There you go.
You could have just drank something else. Suck it up,
No.
man.
No. It's my drug. I can't just drink something else. I know
Water.
stuff.
Water's good.
Water. I had water already. There's nothing in it.
I know there's nothing in it.
There's no caffeine.
No. I need to get high, Mike. I need to get high. I can't just drink water. You drink retro. You read retro comics. You need to be high when you read them. That's how I enjoy them the most.
It's when you're high.
Because I can see the patterns of what they're trying to tell us.
Want to get high? Want to get
They
high?
want to get high.
That's when you hit one of those Kirby collages of the cosmos, and you feel like you're floating through it.
Yeah, you're always taken to another world. That's what they do.
Transfer. Yeah, I got up and ran a quick errand myself this morning. Because I'm like,
Went to the comic shop.
yeah, it'd be nice if they were open that early.
Oh man, would it? I would have loved that.
Because that's my favorite time to shop, is first thing in the morning when
4 a.m.
before it gets busy. That would be nice. Yeah, if I got up that early, I
Right,
would, but
after you come out of patrol.
yeah, I
I
was
was
at, but
hoping that after you protect the streets,
yeah.
you want to go to the comic shop.
I would go back to paper comics if I was a 24-hour comic shop or something.
Yeah.
Probably would. Just so I could go
No,
there.
you wouldn't. You
I
couldn't deal with all
would.
that paper.
No, I
You might
couldn't, but I.
go in to check stuff out, but you couldn't
I'll
go
go
back to
there.
paper.
I'll be holding comics in my hand like, I can't do this. It's too
Just
much
like,
paper.
it's too much paper.
Ah! Can you scan it into my iPad? If I pay you, can you scan it in?
Yeah, so I was at Kohl's about 10 minutes before they opened, and I was laughing at this woman because how do you not realize you pull up to a store and there's eight or nine people sitting in their cars and still walk up to the door and try it and find out that it's locked.
Because we're all stupid. We have
I mean,
somebody always does that. Always.
We're not all just sitting here in our cars for
You
help,
know,
you
you
know.
never know if there's an alien invasion and people lose, they become home activated, maybe they'll stay in their cars.
Maybe she thought
Rather
we're
go
all
find shelter.
duplicates. Well, at New York Comic Con, not New York Comic Con, San Diego, that when Chris Kazicki and was talking about people would actually just, if you stop for no reason, people will think it's a line and they'll just stop behind you and form a line, and they won't even ask you right away what you're doing there. They'll just do it, assuming that it's going to be a panel.
That's because there's a line for everything.
Right.
So and you're like, what's this line for? I better get in line. You even have to be in line to move.
Exactly. So he asked, because he's new. He's asked, like, why are you standing here? And eventually they realized, one person stopped to tie their shoe and just stopping.
I've been waiting in line for 2 hours.
That's just the mentality. People will just...
On a train to nowhere.
People will just... They'll do that for doors, too. I did that for a door. Like, some people were like... Three of us were just standing there behind somebody. And I thought to myself, did you try the door? And then somebody walked past us and just opened the door and walked in. I felt like an idiot. Hive mind. You have to fight the
what
hive.
What the hell do you mean I'm in line for Legends of the Fall panel? I've been waiting 2 hours for this shit.
I don't care about no Tristan or no bear.
So, yeah, the only risk of going out first thing in the morning to do my shopping is I know if I'm out for long enough, at some point I'm either going to have to find somewhere to poop or hold it. And usually I'll hold it because I'd rather like either at home or at work. I don't want to have to. But the other thing that sometimes works out is that it's first thing in the morning, so the bathrooms aren't totally trashed and maybe they've just been cleaned.
Maybe.
So I walked over towards the Kohl's bathroom, and it was a good sign because they like the janitor big trash can was outside the bathrooms and stuff, so I thought, oh, they're just cleaning it now, or they had just cleaned it. And it's, you know, probably 9:15, 9:20 in the morning. And I walk in there, and I could see right away, there's three stalls, I could see right away that the first one was occupied. I just happened to have an angle, I saw feet there. So I pass number one, and I go to number three. You know, why go right next
and
to him?
And you sat down in somebody's lap, but they forgot to lock the door.
Almost.
But I had a nickel.
I assumed that there was nobody in there, so I started to open the door. Thankfully, it was locked because there was somebody in there. But I just had that happen, like, where...
So everybody was fucking waiting in their cars so they could take a shit?
Yep. I guess. That's why. That was the first thing that I'm like, man, what are all these people doing?
You can't buy stuff on a shitty stomach. You gotta empty out everything before you start buying stuff.
Yeah, really. So, you know how sometimes... You look somewhere where you don't mean to, and there's that maybe like quarter centimeter or quarter inch gap between the door and the frame, and my eyes just happened to fall right on that gap and look right through at the guy.
You can't unsee Lord. That.
That was
you can't
in
unsee
there.
That.
I can't unsee the like massive bush of pubic hair that I happened to see.
Have you ever been to the bathroom where they have a mirror? Inside, like a side mirror where you could see yourself shitting.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And a disgust disturbing. Of my own
Why
self.
Why would they put a mirror?
Because they want you to be disgusted and leave quickly. They don't want you to stay there.
They're like, God, I can't take this anymore.
I can't take looking at myself.
I hate when people have a mirror above the toilet in their bathroom.
Oh, man, I swear. That's the worst.
I don't think I've ever seen that. A mirror.
There's
above.
No cool. There's a mirror. It's when the stall that you have the big stall they call the handicap stall. If people have to go in that big one.
Yeah.
And the mirror, the when you wash your hands is really. It's one of the small bathrooms. It's really close. I think it was a hotel bathroom. I saw that. It's really close. Do you see that end mirror? And if you peek out through the thing, you could actually see a reflection of yourself. I said, "Who is that fat fuck sitting on the toilet?" With the same glasses as me and a Superman shirt on
and an iPad reading comic books. What the
wait
fuck?
A minute.
What coincidence is this?
With his caca phone.
It's his caca iPad.
What is going on? Oh, shit.
Comics in the toilet. That's me.
That's me. Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah, so I briefly considered going install number two, even though I didn't really want to be the one in the middle.
You didn't want to form a trident?
Yeah. But just as I was reaching out to grab the door from stall number one, the one I originally saw was occupied, all of a sudden I hear...
Oh.
I'm like,
my bad.
I'm holding it. I'm out of here.
Yeah. You couldn't get in the empty stall?
I didn't want to after I heard that. I was
You're
like,
surrounded.
I don't want to be next to that.
Like, I don't know. Sometimes you have to purge.
You do. Well,
sometimes you have to purge, and you don't give a shit if you have to elevate your ass above that seat.
I did that at work.
Shit.
No, I mean, I gauged my ability to. I mean,
you
I had
never
to go
know
back
the air
and
that. See, unlike Keith, I don't fart in the office, right? So when I do have to go,
a silent but deadly one out. Like,
I was beaten into being considerate and not actually farting on people, so I don't. It's a habit. It's like a natural thing to not let all gases out unless you can't help it. It's no choice. So when you go to the bathroom, sometimes I'll even think I have to shit, and it's not because that I have to shit. It's that I have to let out a big, gigantic fart. Because you hear all that. You hear, like the hole in the, like the squeezing the air out of a pocket.
It's like a balloon. You let a little bit of air out.
It's like,
woo!
And then I'm like, wow, I feel so much better now.
That's because you leave it bottled up, see?
Exactly.
You hurt yourself.
I was taught not to fart on people unless they're friends.
Unless they're friends. Well, I guess Keith thinks that everybody's a friend. Even the strangers in the elevator.
Keith loves everyone. That's what the problem is. He loves everyone.
That's what it is, yeah.
Farts on us all. He's like Fart Jesus. He just farts on us all.
Fart Jesus.
Share my love with all of you. Bless
so
God,
are,
bless
are you still backed up? Is that what the end of the story is? You still haven't gone?
Oh, no. I took care of that as soon as I got home.
That you're going to have a shit
watch. That's fucking weird. Is like everybody's waiting in line to get to Kohl's. Like is Kohl's that big of a, like, it's like a Comic-Con. And then the first thing you do is have to hit the shitter.
That's what I was wondering. I wasn't surprised to see one person in there, but that's why I just assumed that third stall was going to be open.
After you fiddled with all the people stalls, you didn't want to take the one that was available.
You ever had to shit really bad and someone just came out of the stall and you don't want to? You have to, though. You have to
you
go.
You have to. You don't give a shit.
Oh, I love those. I love that now they usually all the bathrooms have those things where you can put on top of it the covers.
The paper covers?
Yeah, I usually double up the paper covers. I do like two or three. So
I think one of the worst experiences I had actually was in New York City. I was in Chinatown, and the only place I could find to go to the bathroom was like a two-story McDonald's.
Oh, no.
Oh, man, that was...
McDonald's is worse because that's the homeless people's bathroom.
I know.
That's the way. If your last resort is McDonald's, just shit in the street. It's just better. It's cleaner and you shit in the street because that's all the homeless people sit there all day, all night, like especially at night, and they shit in there. And them poor people don't want to go in there and clean that shit up. Them kids don't want to. It's like, I'm going to college. Why the fuck am I cleaning up all this shit out of this bathroom? What did I do wrong?
Yeah, you just check the box and clean.
Exactly.
Get the fuck out. Why, so is, there shit? Why is there shit in the urinal? You know?
Yeah, I got an asshole boss. They don't pay us that much. Fuck you. Check.
All right. Let's talk about comic books. Get out of the ass talk.
No Buck Rogers?
Enough caca talk.
Oh, we'll talk Buck Rogers, but we'll talk Buck Rogers later.
Oh, okay.
We can talk Buck Rogers now. You want to talk Buck Rogers?
No, I just thought you were going to do Buck Rogers first, and then you're done.
We'll do Buck Rogers first.
We change it up.
We can change
it up.
Don't matter.
I'm just a guest. Y'all run the show. I'm just here.
Buck Rogers. Let's talk Buck Rogers.
All right. We had our dollar returns.
Yeah, that sexy
the name
woman.
Of the episode.
Who had three Buck Rogers. She wanted to have a gangbang of Buck
Damn
Rogers.
Damn right, she did.
Yeah. Yeah, at one point, she's got three Buck Rogers in the room, and Kane says, "What can she conceivably do with Rogers for an hour and a half?"
That's when you look at the screen and go, "Really?"
She is so obsessed with that guy.
She is.
But she's smoking. I can't believe that Buck Rogers doesn't even at least go in for a peek.
I would have gave in. I'd have gave in. Earth would have been destroyed. I'd have gave the secret. I want a taste. I'd have been like, fuck that. I'm out. I'm giving in. I'm going with the princess. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he came as close as he ever did, I think, at this episode, because he was talking to her, telling her, you know, "You're the most beautiful woman I have ever seen," but telling her that it just wouldn't work out, though. But so this episode,
Kane actually cracks me up, though, because you know when he's shaking his head, like he like knows in the back of her mind that she just wants to fuck Buck, and he's like working for her, and he's like, "What do you mean you need three Buck Rogers sent to your room? What the fuck? What the fuck are you gonna do with Buck Rogers?"
He has the worst job in the world.
And then he has to program those Buck Rogers, and then he's gonna get shit for it.
Yeah, he gets shit for it.
And who fucks up? It's not Kane. Kane's just doing his job, but Ardala blames him because she fucking. We'll talk about that later, but that was fucking insane. That plan was just stupid.
It was stupid. But that's why they don't kill him. You would think that they would have killed Kane already with all the failures that they've had.
But it's always Ardala that leads to failure.
That's why they don't kill him. They say he's the only one that can deal with her ass all day long. So leave him. Leave. It's punishment enough.
He probably gets a good paycheck from her father. Like a big paycheck. Sure.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Put up with this spoiled brat daughter of mine.
And they probably talk. They probably talk every day.
Yeah, they're probably like best friends. He's like, "Your daughter's a bitch."
Shit. And she's like, "Oh, wait, if you met her mother, you'd know where it came from." They talk all the time. Do you know the plan she has now? To clone Buck Rogers? Oh, Lord. Just let her do it because it keeps her out of my hair. I don't want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kane's basically so he doesn't have to deal with her. But, yeah, so this is a plot. Basically, they got they've developed technology that they can duplicate people. And as it starts out, Kane has been working with these prototypes, and they're on like their seventh prototype. I guess they're trying to fly a particular attack pattern or something like that.
It's a hatchet fighter, a draconian hatchet fighter, and they can't keep them.
Yeah.
They end up blowing them all up because the reaction times of the draconian pilots are way too fucking slow.
Yeah, they don't have the skills to they don't fly like Jazz.
Right.
That's right. Can't
do it.
So they ultimately decide that they're going to try to get a sample of Buck Rogers.
I bet they will. Couldn't they just find any girl or in Earth that
Ardala says, "Well, why don't you go fly your piece of shit and show me how it's done?" Like she wants Kane to get out on the plane and see if he can fly his own craftsmanship. And Kane is like, "No, fuck that. We could come up. We'll spend a billion trillion gazillion credits to make a spaceship that looks like a old NASA ship and put a fake pilot in it." And see if we can lure Buck Rogers to the ship.
It almost worked, too.
Yeah, he says, "Once we have a prototype, we can improve on the model." And Ardala's just like, "I doubt it." Talking about Buck. There's no improving on Buck Rogers, in her opinion.
No.
But, so speaking of Buck, we have another in numerous installments of jokes about 20th century technology and stuff, when apparently Buck is requested a ping pong table, and what he ends up with is a ping pool table.
That's because Twiggy put it together.
Yeah, Twiggy screwed up
He combined and he used pool balls, so when he goes to serve, the ball just goes thud and rolls over to the other side.
You know why? Because he only half-ass listens to Buck when he talks about the old days. So he never gets it completely right.
He tries, though. He tries,
he
man.
Does try.
He looks up to Buck. Like, Twiggy's life would be miserable if Buck wasn't there.
Oh, he was bored before Buck came along.
Yeah, he'd be bored to tears.
He was so bored.
He likes to learn the euphemisms and the 20th century sayings.
Oh, he loves
He's more
it.
Interested in that, I think, to learn that stuff. But
he wants to stream porn and shit back in the day. You know he does. You know he does.
At you night. Even learned about sex from Buck.
You know he did. He's like, beady, 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 can I watch?
While they're messing around with that, this ship shows up, and it looks like it has an astronaut on it, like similar to what happened to Buck. It's almost like a recurrence of same situation that had with Buck. So him and Twiggy decide to board the ship and check out the astronaut, and turns out to be a fake, and they immediately realize that it's a trap. This is how they set up to try to get Buck. Ardala and Kane did. So they get trapped there. The door closes, and they find themselves transported to the Draconian ship, where Buck shows up. Hey, obviously, he has at this point. He's got a pretty good history with Ardala's henchman, Tiger Man, and Tiger Man's like rocking this like animal print vest. So he's like a nice costume, Tiger Man. Says something about Halloween, I think, like something like that. But makes fun of his outfit. Tiger Man doesn't really. Besides that, though, Tiger Man doesn't really have much of a role in this episode.
No, he doesn't. Even though they had that bonding in the previous episode, because he saved Tiger Man's life.
Yeah.
He could have killed Tiger Man. Ardala was like, "Kill him! Kill him!"
They never deal with that again.
Yeah, they didn't really have much of.
But they had another scene though, where Tiger Man let Buck go free, and he says, "You know, I don't owe you anything anymore." So they're back to square one.
Yeah. So, Buck's at this point, it's old hat for them to be dealing with Ardala. You know, he's just kind of at this point, he's almost kind of like not sick of it, but just how many times are we going to deal with this? How many times is she going to mess with me? And
just have sex with her already. I don't know why he just fights just, it so just much.
Plant a seed and leave.
Yes. Just have That's sex all she with wants. Her. Yes.
You'd save the earth by giving her some cum.
It's the least he can do to help Earth survive, right? I mean, damn, Buck, why are you so stingy?
So what he tries to do immediately is try to escape. And, man, his kicks must be fucking powerful, because they, like, knock people unconscious. Just one little kick.
Yes, they do.
And then they bring in the stunt man to do it, because Buck can't kick.
No, he can't. He can't lift the leg up that high anymore.
Yeah, he goes like total karate all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Goes crazy.
Goes crazy and starts kicking, but they capture him as usual. And then they always like have him, instead of putting him in cuffs, they always have two Draconian guys grab him by the arms like they're escorting him into a prom or something.
They do. Yeah, he says, "What do you got up your sleeves this time, princess?" She says, "Nothing but myself."
And I would have been, you like, know what? Whoa. Let's do it.
Let's do the wild thing. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun, dun,
dun. I noticed this time, compared to some of the other acting that we've had on the show, Pamela Hensley actually is pretty good actress. Like, she definitely really sells the whole Ardala character, I think.
Oh, yeah, she's
she
great.
Can make herself cry. Yeah. She could do whatever she needs to do.
She's done so many other she's done so much TV, though, after that, too. Like, I think with Magnum P.I., I think she's done. And, Matt Houston, she did. She's done a bunch of TV.
But she did her skimpy outfits like this.
Always. Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
The maybe nude bomb.
Maybe on Love Boat.
You know what? We got to find this. The nude bomb.
What is
she
that?
She did that Get Smart thing. I think it was a Get
Smart movie. Oh, it was the takeoff of the Get Smart one.
Yeah.
I saw that movie.
I need to see it again. Long time ago
at the theaters.
I need to see it again. I don't remember it, though.
Good luck finding it.
I know, right?
I don't think they've released that movie.
Let me check Amazon. Maybe they'll have it on streaming at least.
But anyway, they put him in this contraption, which looks like a regular astronaut contraption.
Mm-hmm.
They gas him, and they basically record his movements and stuff as he thinks fighting some other pilots. It's really just gathering movements in the computer so they can record it. And while they're also doing that, they're tapping his memories and like looking at his old fighter planes that he used to fly and all his movements. And it looks like just old video footage
of not like bad.
Top Gun.
Not a bad plan so far. It really isn't.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and he's fighting holographs, basically. They got him in a simulation. It's all holographs he's fighting.
But couldn't they have just trained their own people and have them watch the video?
That'd be too easy.
Couldn't they just do that and they wouldn't have to pay all that? They just train them.
So they get these robots, and Kane is pretty much like, you know, if we could get $3 to fly these planes, then Earth will have no chance.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get these droids cloned and clone him, and Buck tries to escape several times.
Of course.
To no avail. One time he's with Twiggy, and I don't even know why they would allow him in there, but the Draconian fighter pilots are training with these, like, what'd you call them? The electric staffs or something like
that? They're stun sticks.
Stun sticks. And they're fighting, and Buck's, like, making fun of them as they're fighting. He's like, you bunch of girls fighting with these sticks? You guys suck.
And the best thing is, like, to get ready... He's gonna fight them, and to get ready, it's a small little room, and to get ready, he runs little laps around them. Like that's his warm up, was to jog these little laps with Twiggy around the two of them fighting, and then he stops. Like you could tell that was his warm up because he's like, all right, now I'm gonna talk shit on them.
That's how he gets his legs together.
And literally, they must not want to get sued because at this time, Gil Gerard must be like the shit, like. Don't touch my body, because his fight scenes don't last longer than 2 seconds.
No.
And he has to get like 2 blows in, and then the fight is over.
Then you fall down.
Yeah, so it's like he hits him with stick, stick, down. And then he defeats them. And then they like open the door to escape with Twiggy. And then there's Tiger Man, and he's smiling with a big smile on his face. He's like, ha, 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 ha. You thought you were getting away, Buck.
Yeah, and that fight, it definitely does what you're saying kind of undermine the whole danger of it, because it starts off, you think it's going to be a pretty big fight because the guy's like, come feel the sting of a Draconian warrior's stun stick.
Yeah, that's
trying to fuck me? What are you doing? What are you... That's what it
that
sounded
like. Badass, though. Like, he really did look like he could kick Buck's ass.
Yeah, and then the fight's just, like, totally anticlimactic.
Now, the other Draconian guy looked like a stick. Like, no muscle mass whatsoever.
Like he was a cousin or something? He was an extra? They just said, hey, come on. Just do this part real quick.
Just do this part.
Put the coffee down. Like... Come on.
But they try to escape several times. And one time, they're trying to escape, and he's trying to escape with Twiggy, and Twiggy can't run.
No, he can't run.
He's like several miles behind. You know
how many times he had to pick him up early on and just run with him?
Yeah. But this time he didn't pick him up. He didn't think about that.
Because he's Gil Gerard, he ain't picking him up no more. He's too heavy now. Exactly. He's like, fuck that. I ain't got to do that no more.
There's a real person in this thing.
You got to give him roller skates or something. I'm not picking that thing up. You crazy? My back hurts.
All this technology, and they can't invent propulsion of any kind or like
nothing.
Put rollerblades on him so you can at least push him.
But, yeah, the first duplicate that they make was like is pretty awesome because he's kind of defective. He's a complete moron, basically.
He was funny as hell, though.
Yeah.
That scene was one of the best scenes ever.
He was like totally. A drunken, he was a college frat guy. drunk college frat guy is exactly what he was.
And he was getting all his sayings incorrect.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, Gil Gerard was awesome. Like playing this duplicate, he's like, "Hey guys, how's it going?" It's like big cheesy grin on his face. Everything he say, "What's going on, everybody?" It's like super cheesy guy.
Yeah.
Totally corny. But they send he's actually a bomb, and they send him back, like pretending that because by this point Wilma and Dr. Hugh and all them. You know, they've been searching for Buck and trying to get a lead on where him and Twiggy went. So they send the corny Buck back and, he makes radio contact with them and like, "Oh, Buck, I'm so glad to hear from you. And, is Twiggy with you?" And he's "No, no, Twiggy didn't make it."
But he says it with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, Twiggy didn't make it."
Yeah. Like, "Oh, I'm sorry, Buck." He's like, "Oh, that's okay.
That's okay. We'll get new one."
Yeah. "We can get a new one."
Sure.
And, so they're immediately like, okay. And, you know, yeah, he acts pretty strange. Like, Wilma comes to his room and into Buck's quarters, and he's just sitting there at the table staring off into space, you know, because he's a robot and everything. And she walks up to him, like, "What the hell is he doing?" And
he looks high, right?
Yeah. And so he kind of reactivates when he realizes that she's near and stuff. And, you know, what's wrong with you? Why haven't you watered your plants or anything? And so, like, he accesses his memories that, like, suddenly remembers, oh, yeah, that's something that Buck Rogers does. So he goes up and he, like, grabs a watering can full of water, and then he just, like, sets the watering can down inside of the plant. Just like, what the hell is going on with this guy?
Why would they not realize it? They should have sent him back hurt. Like, they should have sent him back so he can be...
bomb back to them.
Yeah, and then, but he'd be like, "I'm tired."
Especially after that, when he's watering the plants, and you know it's, like, just fucking weird, you know?
Yeah.
He doesn't even know how to water the plants. He just fills the bucket and throws it on the plant and leaves the watering thing there.
Uh-huh.
Like, don't you realize?
And they still don't realize. Wilma says, knows something fishy's going on, but she's like, could they have drugged him? You know, could they have brainwashed him? What did they do? Well, yeah. So I guess that's a legitimate thing. You know, they think that he might have been mind wiped or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it seems like they're not, like, this isn't a technology that they would have been aware of, the duplication. Like, it's not something that people have done before or something, so. But yeah, his mission is to try to get Dr. Hewer, Dr. Theophilus, Wilma, and all them in the same place. So he does a real awkward job of it, of suggesting that they all meet together and stuff, but... At that point, once they're all in the Dr. Hewer's main office that you see a lot in the show, the sensors in their base are able to detect that there's a bomb somewhere, and there's a woman that's coming along with a scanner or something like that to detect the bomb and says, "Somewhere in this room, you know." And
she doesn't even serve a part though, because she goes and doesn't think to point the detector at Buck.
No, it's Wilma kind of that figures it out.
Wilma just decides to shoot him.
Yeah.
She's bad at her job.
Wilma saves the day, but
she says, "You know
she
what?
Does roll the dice. What if he didn't have the bomb?"
Yeah, she definitely takes a chance.
Whoops.
And it's almost like she's not totally sure because when it works, she breathes a sigh of relief.
What if it was just his belt or something? It was like a belt buckle.
Yeah.
Or something on his clothes, and it wasn't, and it was Buck. He was just acting crazy.
Uh-huh.
They would have killed Buck. That would have been it. They could have tricked him into killing Buck for them.
Yeah. Then they would have not. They would have been able to attack Earth because the Buck's the only one that can defeat them.
Yeah. When how did they survive before Buck came? Is what I would love to know.
I have no idea.
Because none of them could fight. None of them.
Ardala must not have been in charge.
None of them could shoot. Like it was only one soldier. It was her, and that was it. Everybody else was just complete
incompetent.
Idiots.
Didn't know how to fly.
Yeah, they didn't know how to do anything.
Or either that, or you had to bring back like the old crew, the guys that were like 70 or 80 years old.
Exactly.
They were the only other ones that could fly. It's like the new generation. None of them knew how to fly. They were with their iPads. They wouldn't have time to learn to fly.
How did they not kill themselves just trying to fly out of the hangar bay?
I don't know.
How do you be that incompetent? I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's one of those crazy time travel things where Buck ending up in the future is what saves the future.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But they make $3.
Yeah, so they lose that first one.
It is pretty cool how there's one scene where they make the $3 and they're being introduced to Ardala. And if you look at the back of their heads, they got like three different actors.
You know,
one of them like had a hairline that was on the other side and looked like he was going bald. Like they put just a toupee on his head. One was like 2 inches or 3 inches shorter than Gil Gerard. And one was the right Buck.
You could tell they had no money.
They had no budget to duplicate him. That was the back shot. When they did the front shot, it was better, but it was the exact same image.
That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. When they showed the $3 facing the crew when they were going to put him launching to Earth, Barb was like, wow, they didn't even put a cup around Buck, and like his dick is hanging out. Like it's there, and it's like hanging to the left. And I'm like, wow. And then you look at all the dicks, and they're all hanging the same.
They're all hanging the same way. I would, too, with our dollar in the room. With them tight-ass pants on me.
But Ardala invites all of the clones to the room for...
Well, you saw the look she gave, right? When they were all there. She...
Oh, shit. Skype. You back?
Did I leave?
Yeah, you were talking about the looks, and then I lost you.
Oh, I guess my Skype acted up. I said Ardala looked like she wanted to fuck all three.
Oh, yeah, and it looked like it was going to happen, but they all had different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One was, like, depressed. Like, it was the Buck from his birthday Buck, you know, from the episode. He was like, I don't even know what to do. I'm just contemplating life over here in the corner.
He is introverted.
One was like a male chauvinist, you know, and then the other one was just wanted to give massages. The male chauvinist was like, come here, tell me about the women of your time. And he starts talking about planes. He's like, I had an F-15 and I was massaging the F-15 and I would like rub up and down inside the cockpit, and she's getting all pissed off.
And then bombs away.
And then bombs away. I shoot the bomb. He says, tell me about the women. And by then she's thoroughly pissed, and that's when Kane's like, what the fuck is she doing in there? It's been an hour and a half with $3.
Does it take that long with $3?
Yeah, it turns out that much to her chagrin, most of that time's been taken up listening to what I had written down as badass pilot Buck talk about planes for 2 hours.
And it's funny, she's matured since the movie, because in the movie she would have fucked the Bucks.
Yeah, she would have.
She would have just said, I don't care, I'm gonna fuck the Bucks.
She listened to a stupid story. That massage that the other Buck was giving her must have been at least half good.
It was good.
Even though he was pressing too hard.
You always start with the feet first. She wears those heels. You rub the feet first, then you go to the back. Duh.
Pour some chocolate sauce.
That's after they get comfortable when you rub the feet. then you do the back, and then you go,
okay.
Where's that bottle of sauce on the table? What are you going to use that for? You're relaxed. Don't worry about it. Bombs away.
So she goes to the mirror, and that's when she contacts Real Buck, and Real Buck realizes that something's going on, and he's real depressed, and she just starts crying. Like, she's like, I can never have that man. and these bucks aren't going to cut the mustard. So she then calls Kane and says, let's invade Earth right now. Let's just blow the shit out of it and kill everybody.
But it makes no sense because Buck has fucked countless women for no reason.
Yeah, for no reason.
And he doesn't care. Like, he's never going to see them again. He's fucked so many women he will never see again. Why won't you just fuck this woman already? You could save Earth. You could be the next prince or something.
And that's all she asked for. She even said, "Will you just be my gigolo?" That's what she said. She said, "I know we can never you won't give me the love that I can give you, but can you be my gigolo?"
She would probably tell him all the secrets he wanted and he needed for the when her father gets ready to attack places. She would probably tell him all the secrets and stuff.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you, for the good of the planet, why won't you have sex with this hot, beautiful woman? I don't understand it.
Yeah, he's fucked everybody else. Why won't he?
It's not like it's a religious thing where you don't want to have sex with anyone unless you're in love. You don't care. You sleep with women, aliens that you saved, like women you just saved from something. You don't even care.
And there's that one awkward scene where that bad bomb, you know, they've deactivated the bomb already, but there was the one scene before he's going to blow it up and he like hugs Wilma. Yes. And he's like, he just wants to rub her ass and shit. It's a droid. And they basically show the view of the robot like it's looking through a periscope.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote.
I want that ass.
He finally showed interest, and Wilma's like, what the fuck? Why is he showing interest in me?
Yeah. Well, what's going on? That's how she knew. That's how she knew. Because she was trying.
Why did this robot grab my ass?
And why is his dick hard? I don't get it. It was never hard when I was around him before. Shoot. She tried to throw herself at him and to get information when she thought he was evil or something.
Yeah.
And he just... It's something with him where if they want him, he don't want him.
Yeah.
If they want him too much and they care,
yeah,
you don't want him.
It's when they don't want him that it's a challenge.
Right, or they just don't care. That if they don't care about him, that's when he wants to have sex with them. He's a sick man. That Buck Rogers, he's just a sick man. I think when he has sex, it's like that crazy sex. It's like that really, like, he likes to get tied up and stuff. Like, beat me.
But they send these three draconian planes with three bucks in them to Earth, and Twiggy and Buck are still in their cage, and they have one last plan, and this plan is just fucking hilarious, isn't it, Chris?
Stupidest plan ever.
Yeah, the plan is essentially to pretend he's a robot. And Ardala falls for it. So he'll pretend he's answering the questions in a robot and then repeat it over and over again. And then do the eye thing. And Ardala falls for it and she says, oh, we've been duped. We sent the real Buck away and left one of the duplicates behind. And that's where everything goes to shit.
Of course it does. Is Chris there?
I don't know.
I see him in the window. Oh,
you hear me?
Yeah.
I accidentally hit my
mute button.
Yeah. I've been saying a lot of stuff that I don't know how long.
You've been talking about flying and
yeah. I contributed a lot of amazing insights. But, oh well, it's lost the time. But after he pretends to be a duplicate and he's successful. I like that Twiggy. I'm surprised Twiggy hasn't said this before. He says, let's truck Buck. And they take off. So that's Spear's new catchphrase. Let's truck Buck. So we get, we end up having Buck versus Super Pilot Buck. It's a showdown between the two of them.
Yeah. All three.
Yeah. But yeah, it kind of comes down
Wilma,
pretty quickly.
Wilma does take out one or two, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm. The ones that aren't too good at, like, sexy buck and introverted buck, massage buck, sexy buck, whatever. But
I think depressed buck went out first, I'm pretty sure.
He wanted to die.
He probably tried to do a suicidal thing.
Please kill me.
He just hit the self-destruct button as soon as he was in space. He put
his plane right into the laser is what he did. Yeah. He's like, fuck this shit.
Yeah. But yeah, it does kind of come down to real buck and then the obsessed with planes buck, who's pretty decent challenge. They have that like back and forth that you have a lot of times when you have duplicate stories where like they anticipate each other's moves and stuff.
Yeah.
And doesn't it kind of come down to, yeah, Wilma, again, she's got to kind of make a choice between...
which one's the right one?
Which one to shoot. And it seems like, again, she's not like 100% certain because you could tell that she's really relieved when she hears Twiggy's voice.
Yeah, she knowing smiles. That's the real one. Little... She's
like, what oh, she okay. should have said was, if I was naked right now, who would want to be in the room with me? And the first one to go, I would.
shoot him.
And kill him. Yeah. That's how you do it.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because we talked about before how the lack of like romantic tension between regular Buck. So I thought it was interesting that they touched on that this episode with having one of the duplicates immediately. It kind of acknowledged that fact, you know, that
they
that
bang you over the head with it. Whenever something is wrong with the other, that's when they want to fuck the other one. When she was a vampire. She wanted to fuck Buck.
That's right.
It's always episodes. Every time they do an episode, it's one of them being taken over, whatever. It's always the first thing they think is, I'm going to fuck him.
Or the Ardala episode where she's watching Buck have sexy eyes with Ardala. Then she gets jealous and she gets jealous eyes. She's like, why is Buck looking at him? Yeah, there was that one. I think this is the one thing that Buck fucked up is that one. The Ardala episode where Aaron Gray or Wilma Deering invited him up to the room, and he turned her down because he wanted to spoil Ardala's plan. He should have went to the room first.
You would think that, right? See, if me and Mike were in the future...
How could you turn down Aaron Gray? How could you
If
stop?
Me and Mike were in the future, we'd have had sex with Wilma, Ardala... It'd have been no conversation. Okay.
And I bet you Earth would be at peace.
It would, because we would bring everyone together. We would bring everyone together, because we wouldn't say no. We wouldn't sit there acting like that. That's that pretty boy shit. You know, when they're pretty boys, they act like that.
You're like, I don't care if you're not a guest star. I don't care that you're a regular on the show.
Me and Mike are men of men. We would have been like, yeah. What else I'm gonna do? I'm in the future. What else can I do?
Cancelled after the first episode because I'd be in love there.
I would marry Wilma so fast. I would wear her jeans for her. I don't even care. She could do whatever she wanted to me. I don't care. Did I tell you that I smelled her? She smelled so good when I met her that time. at Wizard World when she hugged me, wanted to hug me. That's how nice she was.
Yeah.
I didn't ask for the hug because I didn't want to be the pervert, even though I was thinking it. She said, come over here. We gave money to her charity, and she was like, come over here. I'm going to hug you.
Yeah, she does like a lot of charity things. The time that she was doing it was for like battered women or something like that.
That is exactly. She told us the whole story about that. Yeah. Like we talked to her for a long. She's not one of those celebrities that kind of like doesn't want to be there and not talk to you.
Oh, she'll talk to you for a long time.
Yes, I love.
She doesn't even rush you. Like
no,
to make you feel like move along. You know,
she's like you fucker. Just put the money on the table and get out. She's not one of those. You could tell when they're there and they don't want to be there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, she really is having a fun time. Like, she really loves
She'll being. Ask you questions.
Yeah, she asks. Just,
yeah.
Oh, my God. How can you not love her?
I don't know.
I'm wanting to get That's on awesome. One knee right there. I'd give anything for you.
But the finale of the scene has a ping pong table again, and it is a good scene too because he basically says, oh, now I have a real ping pong table and we could play. And he wants to, like, play Dr. Ewer. And they start playing, and Dr. Ewer scores, like, twice immediately. he serves it, and Ewer, like, slams it over. Pow!
It makes me think that he was practicing. I think he was practicing while he was away.
And he's like, are you hustling me? And then so Buck, Buck starts to do his robotic thing.
Yeah.
Starts repeating himself, and then Ewer and Wilma look at each other. It's like, do we have a duplicate again?
That was funny.
Yeah.
That
was funny. And then he just says, gotcha.
Yeah. It's the most futuristic ping pong table I've ever seen, too.
I know.
It's like a clear glass table, and it's got like neon lines through it and stuff like that. It's pretty sweet.
You know what they do with those kind of tables now.
I like the first ping pong table when he tries to volley that pool ball. And it just goes thud and rolls over the other side. And Wilma says, I thought you were supposed to hit it over the net. I win.
I wonder if they tried to do this show now, what it would look like if they tried to redo this.
I don't know. It's a very unusual show because there's not a hell of a lot of action, because the action scenes last like 3 seconds because they can't have the stunt double do all the action, I guess.
Nope.
And then I don't know. It's just a weird show. It's almost like it's like made to be a sexy show. It's like made to be that.
It is, and then they kind of get away from from that.
It's almost like a futuristic sexploitation film.
It is, with the disco stuff and the outfits and the pants. Like, Wilma's not she's not a sex pot, but they have her wearing jeans and stuff that makes it look like, you know, that she's very, very sexual, and she's not. She's more about business. She likes to hang out and have fun. Like, she'll have beers with you. Like, yeah. Wilma's the kind that'll have beers with the guys pilots, and stuff. Yeah, like, that's the kind of person she is. She's not the, you know, and then Ardala, yeah, she's the one that's very sexual. But even with her, she's not even, she wants to settle down with Buck.
Yeah.
So on paper, it looks like they're all like that. But when you get into the characters, they're not. They're really not like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. And I think Erin Gray actually, I think, really portrays the character in a way. She sells the fact that she's like very competent. Mm-hmm. You know, she's very you could tell that she's like it's not strange that she's in the position that she's got. She definitely seems like she knows her stuff and everything, because she's
well, everyone
that, like,
else is an idiot.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt either. Yeah.
They're all idiots
except for Dr. Ewer and her and Theopolis.
There's only two, and they never listen to them when it's something important. They try to tell them, and they never listen.
Yeah.
They never listen. Until the end, when something really bad happens, and Buck goes off script, and then they want to go after Buck. Because every time, in the beginning of the first season, they were always waiting for Buck to be the traitor. Like, they always expect him to be the traitor.
Yeah.
And the only two that liked him is Wilma and Ewer. So that's it. Everybody else hated his guts.
Yeah, until they bonded with him. Yeah. On a desert planet where you have to eat lizard toad.
wait till you get to the when they go on that ship. The second season when they go.
Where they have the falcon guy?
Yes. You want to talk about weird?
Yeah.
Totally. Oh yeah, that. Weird.
I remember liking that Falcon guy, but I remember the stories just were like they just weren't as good.
No, it was just weird. You could tell they didn't know what to do with the show anymore. They ran out of stuff.
Yeah, actually, that reminds me. I got a message, some feedback relating to the second season from Aaron Makem.
Oh yeah,
Who does the Sci-Fi Dig podcast?
Yeah, I listen to that.
Yeah, but he sent me a message. He said that he's a huge sci-fi junkie and mentions the show, and he said he enjoys the retrocast, and says, I wanted to weigh in on Buck Rogers. I'm sure I'm in the minority, but I like season 2 much more than the first season. I thought the character of Hawk was so badass. Buck and him started as enemies, but ended up friends. I haven't rewatched it because I fear that I'll find it terrible someday. That's it. Take care.
Well, maybe he should join us because we'll probably likely keep going.
He should. Yeah, he should. Yeah. That'd be funny to hear that. Like, it made it, like, it looked like they wanted to make, it part Long Ranger and Tonto or part.
Yeah.
Because they give him such a tragic past. They give, you know, and it's just so out there.
It lost the sexy.
Yeah, they took the sexy away.
Yeah.
They took the sexy away. And he got fatter. You know, Buck got fatter.
He gained weight. He just stopped caring.
He did. His hair got longer.
But they can't make a longer shirt. They can't change it. They just get it. It looks tighter and tighter.
You notice that, right? The longer his hair gets, the fatter he gets. I'm like, yo, Buck started looking like me. What's going on, Buck? You start running around and warm up? What's going on?
I'm going to run around this little square. And I'm ready.
I'm ready.
Yeah, it was a really entertaining episode. So many things to talk about. There was a lot of funny moments.
Yeah. Adala's the fun. I always love the Adala episodes the most.
Yeah, they're some of the best.
Yeah, they've been good.
And they're the ones that you remember as a kid.
I do. Well, we were perverts.
Yeah, I was like...
perverts, yeah.
You always wonder... me and you are relatively the same age, and you're always wondering as a kid, like, why is Buck being... Why can't he just take it?
I didn't get it. Like, what is so bad about that? Like, what is so terrible about him? Just do it. What is so bad about the sex that you just don't want to do it?
Love that show as a kid, though, man. The hormones were at full steam ahead, and
oh my god,
watching that show and then going to bed, and you'd go to bed dreaming about Wilma or Adala or any of the other sexy women that Buck had.
Oh man,
it's good times. How could you not like it?
Good times.
Unless you're 11 o'clock comics, then you can hate on Buck Rogers.
Oh, is that right? They have.
Yeah.
I hate on anything for pretentious.
It was on one of their shows where something that doesn't hold up.
Yeah. I mean, I find it entertaining.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe if you had memories of it being a different type of show when you were a kid or something, like maybe you watched it and thought it was super serious and well produced and stuff, and then you go back to it and it like totally shatters that illusion.
I never thought of it. I thought of it as, wow, these women are beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, you went into it pretentious then. You thought,
and then they
had
like cool little plots, you know, sci-fi. Yeah. So as a kid, you see spaceships and stuff, so you're happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the women held up.
Oh, the women, they held up. But how can you think a thing where their ceremonies have disco dancing is serious?
I don't know.
How can you ever go into thinking that? Even when you're a kid watching this, how can you ever go into it thinking that?
That's the one thing that didn't change in the future is it's stuck in the 70s.
Yes.
The roller skating and the...
Yeah.
Yes.
In the flashback, the episode they just showed, they had to show the roller skating and dancing.
Mm-hmm. Damn right. That was the
highlights.
World.
Those were highlights of our show.
Yeah, that was the world. You had to have that disco kind of theme to it.
Well, everything comes back, you know, so never know.
It's funny because it's the show has that look of the disco and the sex and the drugs, but no drugs. They can't show drugs, but like that was so much influential back then with disco and whatnot. You know, coke was a big deal.
There was a disco ball. They were doing coke.
Oh, were they? And drugs go with sex. I mean, when you do that, there was just and in New York, man, those clubs out in New York and L.A. where they were just filled with people just having, what do they call it, den of iniquity.
I'm sure it is.
I mean, you hear the stories when they do documentaries about that time and how it was. I mean, people were fucking and doing drugs all over the place, like all actors and actresses and singers. And like, it was just a wild time.
Yep. All right, let's talk some comics.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
Oh,
somebody taking a piss?
You can go first.
You pissing? That's not me. I didn't know it.
That must be Chris.
Yeah, hold on.
Shake.
I didn't know it was this type of show. Shock jocks over here.
It's like...
Damn. Well, that's why I had it muted, and I unmuted it for a second.
This is a dirty show. We talk about disco and dirty. This
is revealed,
dirty show.
I revealed my secret.
You did. That's my secret. I'm always peeing.
Yeah. Well, no, I was thinking that. I'm like, I'm going to have to take a break in a second here. And then I was like, wait a minute. I'm on a laptop. So
Aren't you scared you'll drop the laptop in the toilet?
No, I didn't carry the laptop. I dragged the laptop across the floor.
Oh.
And
damn, it's that big? You just threw it over the side and just peed from there?
Yes. Just create like a high enough arc.
You mentally controlled it with the force, right?
Yeah. Just guide it.
He's got like one of those spray hoses where you can control it. Do you spray or do you have jet? He turned it on to jet mode.
Well, I wish I could do that.
Just turn the knob.
And then you arch your back a little bit.
just a bit. Just
stay
a bit
on target.
On target.
Oh, damn, I hit the seat. Court doesn't stress long enough.
Never.
But yeah, I thought, well, I'll just mute it the whole time and it'll be fine. And then, of course, then I'm expected to speak. It's like, oh, man, I'll just unmute it for a second. It won't be long enough to be able to hear. And then, of course, as soon as I unmute it, who's peeing?
Who was that?
Can't get anything past you guys.
Okay, I got one. Detective Comics 571. It was by Mike W. Barr and Alan Davis with Paul Neary doing the inks. And it was basically, it was Jason Todd. And I swear to God, Alan Davis draws everybody with those smiles, even when it's situations where they get shot or beaten or threaten to kill somebody. They still have those smiles on their faces. It's just unnerving. And he says chum all the time. And basically, it's Scarecrow. They're going after Scarecrow. And this is the first time that Jason Todd had to deal with Scarecrow. It's his first dealings. And basically, it's race car drivers or like the people that are in any type of sports. For some reason, they're the part of them that makes them are more careful is taken away. They don't have that fear of getting hurt. So they crash the planes or they crash cars and all this kind of stuff. So so when the guy in the race car, they get to save one guy. The other ones, they died. So Batman runs to go into the flames to get the guy out. So he's like, I can't, I have to use a hose and you have to water. He says, Robin, water me down. keep it trained on me at all times. He said, good boy, now hose me down now. That's it, good and wet. And then he says, keep it trained on me, Robin, no matter what happens. So Jason Todd's fear is that he would fail. He wouldn't keep him wet long enough and he would die in the fire. So he's worried about it. And then he comes out, he gets him out, and then he's explaining to Jason about why the Scarecrow does what he does. Like, they're at the Batcave and they have their discussion, and Jason Todd is like, well, they were mean to him in school. You know, they were talking about how he was treated like a nerd and they were abusive to him when he was growing up. And, you know, and Bruce goes, well, that is no excuse. You know, and he just gives him a lesson of the day. And it's just such a throwback to how the books used to be. Mm-hmm. When Robin, like how he would give a lesson in the story, he would still give them a lesson on right and wrong. Mm-hmm. And of course, when Jason Todd doesn't listen and he confronts the Scarecrow instead of calling for backup, he gets hit with the Scarecrow gas. And his fear is that he thinks he's going to fail Batman and Batman is going to die.
Isn't that ironic? Because Batman kind of failed him.
Well, it goes back into that too, because Batman gets hit with the fear gas that takes away his, that part of us that keeps us from putting our hand into a fire. And he thinks that he tricks Batman. He gasses him up, and then he says he gives him all these death traps. And because of what he did to him, it's like Batman would be careful and not go into the death traps. But now he's fighting off the urge to try to, to beat them. He's like, I'm invulnerable. I can do this. And he finally, he tries to act like a matador when he's going to get hit by a remote controlled truck. Like, he's trying to give him a show, and he's hopping around and he's smiling. And then he's trying to, he almost jumped into a bunch of gears, cause he's like, I can do this. I can get in between the gears. And, finally he fights the last urge to give in. And then he knocks him down. And then Jason says, well, how did you fight off the gas? And he said, I did that. He said, by replacing the fears, he had a bigger fear. By replacing the fears, the drug was nullified with a different fear, the most terrible fear I could conceive. And he asks him what it is, and he says, maybe someday I'll tell you, chum. And in the background, they draw out in his mind, he's thinking, here lies Jason Todd, 1974 to 1986, murdered by the Scarecrow. Now that was a foreshadowing of what's to come.
They already knew.
Yeah, yeah, it was coming. But I loved it, though. I love reading that old Batman stuff. I just love it.
That's weird, because cool. I read all this stuff and I don't remember the chum. It didn't stand out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm hearing you talk about it, but, man, I do not remember the chum. I remember some of the things that you talked about, but I don't remember the chum.
I didn't remember it either.
Sounds like you said it a lot.
I didn't remember it either until I started rereading it when they had the, when I bought all the stuff. And now I'm, reading all through it, I've read about at least almost 18, I would say 18 issues of some of the stuff in the detective. And he says, it's Michael Bear's stuff, because when he gets on the book, that's when he does chum a lot. Like, it's a lot, but it's dark, though.
It's one of those things that you don't think of, unless you concentrate on it, because the Stanley with the exclamation points and the old Marvel is exclamation point and everything. I never ever noticed it until somebody pointed it out to me, and that's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, and it's so violent. It's funny because it's happy Batman still, but at the same time, it's darker than some of the stuff they do now. I don't think they get away with some of the stuff that he did in here. Like when I showed you the issue where he threatened, he needed information so they could save Catwoman. And the guy that brokers, he knows everything in the villain community. And he was like, I'm not going to tell you. If I do that, every criminal would know that they would think I'm a squealer or something. And I'll never get, I can never do business anymore. So Batman said, all right, I'm going to use your fingerprint. I'm going to plant it at a crime scene. And then I'm going to have you go to jail. And when you get in jail, you know what they do people that look like you, right? And he starts sweating, and he tells him what he wants to know. To threaten to do something like that, they would never have Batman do that.
And then to say chum afterwards. You know what? You're going to get a dick up your ass, chum.
Exactly. Basically what he told him. He said, you're going to get raped in prison, chum. How you like that? And I'm going to falsify evidence to get you arrested. So how about that one?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like nowadays that they'll show more violence, but back then they were less concerned with the heroes being politically correct or whatever.
Yeah, they were.
It's kind of interesting. Yeah, that's funny. I don't know why, for some reason that I did, and I don't think I've read as much Batman from the era as you guys, but for some reason that chump thing did stand out to me. I remember that when you mentioned that I think just stood out as a funny word for Batman to constantly
say,
be using.
Yeah.
It gotta be because he's from England. It had to be something.
Yeah, that's true. Whereas the Stan Lee thing, the exclamation points, I find that guy just read past them.
Yeah.
It's like I'm aware of it, but it's for
Unless
him,
you
it
start
becomes
focusing on him. Then.
Yeah, if you read it, because in my head I don't read it like everything's. It's funny if you do read it as if everything's being exclaimed.
Like, never enjoy it.
If you read it as if like what an exclamation point is supposed to mean, and then you read it like everybody's shouting everything, and it's just kind of crazy. But it just becomes like his punctuation or his period. His like everybody's, you know, just. It's just kind of funny. But that was the style back then, you know. Everything was supposed to be, like, super exciting and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, yeah. So that's cool. Speaking of Stan Lee, do you want me to go next, Mike?
Sure.
I don't have anything written by Stan Lee, but the books that I read this week are from the house that Stan and Jack built. So like last couple weeks I did some indie stuff, and so this time I chose some Marvel stuff, and so the first one I'll talk about is Avengers Spotlight. These issues are all kind of right around like mid 80s, 86, 87. These are all from right around when I started reading comics, and kind of rereads for me, like rereads for the first time since then. So I didn't really remember much. And this issue, Avengers Spotlight 26, is this actually was the issue that started off Acts of Vengeance, which you even want to call it a crossover, it was such a long, like there's like probably more than 50 books that had Acts of Vengeance. With villains sending going up against heroes that they normally wouldn't fight, you know, like Magneto going after Captain America and things like that. But this all starts off here with the Vault prison and a breakout at the Vault prison. It's called Tales from the Vault, and it's a prologue to the Acts of Vengeance. It's written by Dwayne McDuffie, penciled by Dwayne Turner. The inker was me, Chris Ivey, although they spelled my name last name wrong. And
that colorist. Chris Ivey does a lot, though.
Yeah,
I see his name come up a lot.
Yeah, he was.
What was the number again, Chris?
26. Yeah,
it has Iron Man and Hawkeye on the cover.
Yeah. So, colorist Paul Becton. So, we have... So it's kind of a neat snapshot of the era, because what you have this is just like post Armor Wars for Iron Man.
I was about to say that.
Yeah. So it used to be that the guards at the Vault prison had the guardsmen, they're called. They have this like green armor that they wear, the super suits. Armor. Yeah. So they used to be powered by Stark Technologies, and as a result of the Armor Wars storyline in Iron Man, it comes into play here that they had to downgrade to a inferior version of that.
Yeah.
What opens the story is that there's most of the guardsmen are just background figures. There's only one. Frank Ensign, who's the Guardsman Prime, is in charge.
Did you get the feel that they were trying to lead up to doing a series with that character?
I could see that. Yeah, I mean, I
always
see
thought that they were gonna, and then they never did. Like they were leading up to doing like a Guardsman. Even when they took all the other suits away, like he would have one. Like maybe he would. Somehow Tony would feel bad eventually, and he'd be like, "I'm gonna give you this suit. You use this suit to help, and you work at the prison, and maybe you have adventures or stuff."
Yeah.
Outside.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, because they do. You do see him out. You do see him without his helmet on at the beginning of the issue, and
he's the only one that they give any type of identity to.
Yeah.
At the prison.
I could see that. Yeah. So it's the Wizard, the Fantastic Four villain that is being brought in as well as they actually also have like Titania, Claw, Hydra Man, and that was one of the things that when I was a kid, I always loved seeing all these like random villains and stuff, and yeah. This was a good issue for that. Mm-hmm. But they get the wizard out of his costume, and Guardsman Prime he escorts him in this like little scooter to his cell, and you see for sure that there's nobody in the room or in his cell with him. But then he turns around, and all of a sudden there's a man in a green suit and a brown hat that's sitting on one of the bunks, and tells him, you know, if you do a little favor for me, I'll get you out of this place. So next thing you know, as soon as Frank Ensign gets back to the command headquarters in the prison, they see that wizard's talking to somebody, or talking to somebody that isn't there. And he said, you know, either he's up to something or he's going nuts. I better go take a look. So he goes flying back down there. By the time he gets there, the wizard's back in his costume somehow, and takes on the guardsmen. So he starts fighting and stuff like that. And sooner than later, there's a breakout, and you got Mr. Hyde and Scarecrow, Electro, and the Wizard and stuff like that. And at this point, the guardsmen are pretty much outnumbered and starting to freak out, and trying to the people that work there are starting to try to get touch with the outside world, but they're finding out that the cables, their power plant's been severed, they're on emergency generators, and their silent alarm's been knocked out, so no one even knows that they're out of that they're in trouble. The only way that they're actually able to get any word from outside is that the warden of the place was able to get a call out to the Avengers before the phone lines went down. So while that's all going on, Frank is stuck. He's out there, like kind of in the mix of things, and he's trying to work on his helmet because his helmet's messed up. And he gets word out also. So this is how Iron Man gets involved. Iron Man shows up at the same time as Hawkeye comes on his own. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a neat snapshot here where you see that Iron Man and Hawkeye, they're a little bit at odds at this point, because
I felt betrayed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. As soon as, Iron Man's, trying to rescue some of the guardsmen, because a whole bunch of them have been knocked out and just like put in a pile in the one cell. And you see that Iron Man has taken out, is it Whirlwind? Is that his name? The dude with the buzz,
the green helmet on his wrists? Yeah.
Yeah, it's Whirlwind. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, like, Hawkeye sees him, and he actually, attacks right away because, Iron Man had just caused a jailbreak during the Armor Wars, at least according to Hawkeye's perspective. And, you know, Iron Man's telling him, it wasn't me. It was a guy who wore the armor before me. Stark fired him.
Yeah, that
so
was
Hawkeye
a lie,
doesn't even really know, you know, Iron Man's secret identity at this point.
Only Cap knew.
Okay. So they get into a little bit of a battle, and Iron Man gets basically the upper hand on him. Eventually, he's got basically his repulsor, his hand open with the repulsor ray ready to shoot right in Hawkeye's face. So that's enough to convince him to stop fighting and work together. So they put together this like makeshift stretcher that they pile all the guardsmen on, and Iron Man leads that out. They get confronted by Scarecrow, but Hawkeye takes him out. He gets his arrow in Scarecrow's face, and he's like, Scarecrow says, "Don't shoot. What kind of arrow is that anyway? Explosive? Acid filled? Buzzsaw? What?" Hawkeye says, "Sorry, Scarecrow. I'm fresh out of new arrows. This is my old standby. The very sharply pointed, if I shoot you in the chest, it will make a nasty hole arrow." And Scarecrow says, "Let me get that cell door for you." Locks himself up. So, you know, they're able to rescue some of the guards from working together. And they're trying to lock down the prison. But at this point, a lot of villains have escaped, which is how it sets up the Axe of Vengeance, by allowing a lot of these prisoners out onto the streets and stuff. And it ends with kind of a bonehead move from Hawkeye, where they're having some issues with the technology of the to hold the cell doors closed because of the outages and stuff like that. And, you know, the people nearby are wondering if there's only a way to permanently shut down the power. So Hawkeye said, "Oh, this is a perfect opportunity for me to try out this electromagnetic pulse arrow that I have developed." And so he shoots it off. It does the job. Rumble, clank. Everything shuts down, including Iron Man, who face plants into the ground next to him.
Idiot.
Crunch.
Oops.
And it's like, "I really wish you hadn't done that. I just hope the rest of the Avengers show up before that blasted thing wears off." And Hawkeye says, "What?" Because he can't hear, because he mentioned earlier he's got a hearing aid it'd be shut down by the pulse too, so you can't even hear what he's saying.
I didn't remember him having a hearing aid.
I didn't either.
Is that where he fought like a villain that had a sonic thing or whatever?
Something like that. It was so long ago. I think it was.
Oh, what caused it?
He got into a really he got hurt really bad, like in the hospital for a long time. Bad. And part of it was, I think, Tony Stark built him a new hearing. It developed a new hearing aid for him. You know, they can implant in his ear to give him his hearing back. And I think they helped him with a whole bunch of, like, yeah, it was something like that, where he got hurt really, really bad back in the Avengers days, early Avenger days.
That's weird, because tomorrow I go try to get a hearing aid. For my one bad ear.
They brought that back up again because he got hurt in the recent one, Fracture, with the one that Matt Fraction is writing. And he goes deaf again.
Yeah.
He gets hurt in an explosion and he goes deaf again. And then he's sign language. They actually made it a sign. Everybody's doing sign language in the book.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It was like a special thing. And it had little charts and stuff for, you know.
Yeah, there's a 50% chance that this hearing aid will help because it's inverted. Then they make hearing aids for like hearing loss that's like degraded over time, and right. you usually lose your high frequency. But whatever happened to me, I lost my low frequency. So they don't know how that hearing aid will work in my case.
Well, I'm glad you know now at least that you shouldn't fire off your electromagnetic pulse arrow.
Yeah, exactly. I will not mess with the electromagnetic pulses when I have my hearing aid on.
And I want you to have bionic hearing so you can hear everything.
Yeah, that's right.
You can get all the information.
I'll be like Jamie Summers and I'll pull my hair back.
Exactly.
And I can hear all this.
You grow your hair really long and then you do the pull back hair. Like, Mike is listening again. Hold on. And then you have to hear all the stuff. That's happening. Did you all read the whole Axe of Vengeance story, or just parts?
I haven't read every single issue of it. I read random ones because that happened to be going on when I started reading comics.
Oh, okay.
So I've read random ones. Like, I've read the Captain America ones. I actually have another one, an Iron Man one so I've read random ones, but I'm sure there's ones that I haven't read.
Yeah, like Spider-Man was going through his he got superpowers for a summer, because all this was going on in the summertime. It was a summer event, and he was bi-weekly, I think, and he got for whatever reason, he didn't know why, but all of a sudden he had superpowers. Like, he was flying, he had super strength, he beat up the Juggernaut again,
Good thing we didn't have the internet back then.
Yeah.
Fuck, that's not my Spider-Man.
That's not my Spider-Man.
The fuck is he flying? Spider-Man don't fly.
And it was a thing. Like, you didn't know why. You didn't know why he had powers. There was no spoilers, so you just was like, what the fuck is going on with Spider-Man? And it was the whole Captain Universe thing. And at the end, because he got it because the whole thing with he didn't get the full power. He was supposed to get the full power, and something blocked it where he only got part of it. And so at the very end, Loki did this really one big thing. He sent this gigantic creature robot, sentinel-like robot, to destroy New York. And that's what he was supposed to be. That's what he got the powers to do, to stop them from being able to do that. And it was funny because it helped him during the Acts of Vengeance. All the villains, the different villains that he never fought, villains that would have fought Thor and, you know, the big dogs, came at the time when he got those powers, and he was able to beat all of them, and they weren't ready for it. So that's how he beat his enemies.
Yeah, and they were like pissed off about it too. They're like,
"You told me he couldn't do that." Like,
yeah, I was supposed to be able to take him out.
Yeah, they were fighting, and it was really cool. Like, it was a cool time because Iron Man, Tony Stark had to act like he died. He had, as Iron Man, to not get arrested, he pretended that his bodyguard went rogue, and at the end of Armor Wars, he killed himself. And that's why he keeps... And his whole excuse is every time he would meet... This was the new Iron Man armor, because he was supposed to be the new Iron Man bodyguard. And every time he would meet somebody, he would have to go through a long diatribe of explaining the whole thing all over again. It would be a long, yeah, because the other bodyguard before this one got killed, and because he went on crazy and he did the whole thing with the Armor Wars, but that wasn't me. I'm a new guy that was hired by Tony Stark. So I'm your friend.
You gotta like rehearse.
Yeah, don't hurt me. I'm your friend. Don't fight me. So
yeah, well, funny. Actually, one of the other things in this issue was they had in the letters column, apparently they had a. They announced the winners of the favorite Avengers poll from 1989. Mm-hmm. And I guess they announced it in like Avengers 305 and West Coast Avengers 46. And so they had the results here. And I thought it was kind of interesting because they had like three categories. One was favorite Avenger who currently has their own magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain America came out like as number one by a lot. He actually had 521 votes. And the second most popular was Iron Man with only 279. So he was like pretty far ahead there. And then there was favorite Avenger who does not have his own comic book.
Hawkeye.
And actually they include Hawkeye as having his own magazine because...
the miniseries?
Well, I think...
Or Spotlight.
Spotlight itself actually had been a Hawkeye feature book.
That's pretty much his baby.
Yeah, so they include him as one that has his own book, but...
Dr. Druid. It had to be Dr. Druid.
Where is he on here? He's number 23, tied with Jocasta with only 7 votes. Sorry about that.
Dr. Druid.
I feel bad for Jocasta.
People wanted the pervert.
I feel bad for Jocasta. She didn't do anything bad to anybody. Why they do her like that?
I know, that's pretty bad for her. But yeah, Wonder Man was number one with 217 votes. There's like 20, or there's like over 30 of these, so I won't say all these ones, but Black Knight is number 2, Black Panther number 3, Vision number 4, Beast number 5. And then the final category was, which I thought this was very interesting considering, like, in hindsight, looking back on it today, favorite candidate for Avengers membership. And number 1, Spider-Man. 375 votes.
And they made him an Avenger, Bendis did.
Yep. And
well, they played with it. He was at he was actually Avenger before that, because if you remember when they broke up in they got back together in 300, you know, after Druid messed up everything, and then they came back, and it was Invisible Woman and Mr. Fantastic. It was Captain America.
But I didn't think that lasted for more than two issues.
They broke up again.
Yeah, it was.
But after.
I don't count that. Just like I don't count the Fantastic Four with Wolverine, Ghost Rider, and was like 4 issues or 3 issues.
No, you know when Spider-Man joined, Spider-Man was an official Avenger at the same time. at the same time that Rage was an Avenger.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
That was at that summer event where they went in a submarine, and it was Quasar, Spider-Man, Quasar, I think Cap, or U.S. Agent, Rage, I think Gilgamesh, the sleeping whatever.
The Forgotten One.
The Forgotten One.
Everybody likes to forget him anyways.
He only gets power. He can only heal when he goes to sleep. I love that power. That's me. I could do that. Yeah. And it was something else when they were, and it was Iron Man, and then they were in this suit, the suit that we see in Acts of Vengeance, and it was a submarine battle, and they fought for a little while, and then Spider-Man quit again. Like, after the summer event was over, he quit.
Yeah, because prior to that, it was a big deal if he was guest starring. They had that.
Well, they would always do the Avengers, like, who's going to be a new Avenger? They'd always put like Spider-Man's face on there.
Always.
There was a good.
There's probably a ton of people that are like, oh, maybe Spider-Man will be there. They'd put Daredevil too, you know, like all those characters. And you're like, what the fuck? How could they work as a team? They're like so solo-ish.
He's number two on this list, actually. Favorite candidate. By a distant, like, Spider-Man was 375 votes. Number two is Daredevil with 136 votes, and then it drops off again. See, I guess they mean the new Ant-Man, because it's Ant-Man, 78 votes, then Doctor Strange, 53, Wolverine, 51.
Right.
But, I wonder if Bendis, like, went to that survey and said, hey, you know what, I'm going to make an Avengers book.
Let me take these off of here.
People voted for, 20 years ago.
Yeah, because you know what? Who's number six? Spider-Woman. That's funny.
That is funny.
Silver that Surfer. Who's Battlestar, Daryl?
Battlestar was Captain the partner.
America, Captain America.
Okay.
The partner to the other Captain America.
Yeah,
the
one, to U.S. Agent.
Right, he was the black guy.
Okay. Black guy.
First, he was going to be Bucky. Like, he went through the process because they gave him power, you know, trained him and all that kind
Didn't
of stuff.
Didn't he have the Super Soldier Serum, though, too?
Not the Super Soldier Serum. Remember, they were.
Well, he was enhanced or something. Was he one of the wrestlers?
He was one of the. They were both one of the wrestlers where they gave them that whatever serum that they were doing. Yeah. Power. I think it was Dr. Power was giving them.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of people. I think Titania got some of it, too. She had super strength from that, also.
It was good to be a wrestler back then.
Right, and it was a big thing because it was like, now you have Captain America with super strength. Like, you know, you didn't have that anymore before. So it was kind of crazy.
Why does the black man have to have the least amount of votes?
Yeah.
No, he's number 8, 44 votes, and there's a list of...
Who else is last?
Last at number 20 is a tie between Puma and Red Wolf at 10 votes.
Oh my
each.
God, that really grasped.
Wow.
19, I like the one before that even, is 19 tied, a four-way tie at 11 votes each. Human Torch, Rogue, Frogman, and Nick Fury.
Frogman?
Frog?
You know, that's just one dude that's sending in his mail, fucking with everybody.
Yeah.
That's pretty sad.
This is a weird list, man.
Frogman? Who's Frogman? I think a Leapfrog. Leapfrog was the Daredevil villain. Who's Frogman?
I don't know. No, that was a Spider-Man. That was a Spider-Man ally. He had a armored... He was like a nerd.
Leapfrog was the nerd, yeah. And I knew him from Daredevil. But he wasn't necessarily a bad guy.
No, he wasn't a bad guy.
He was trying to be a hero. But in the Daredevil book, I remember he stole shit.
Yeah, he did. He stole, and he tried to atone for it or something like that.
Yeah.
But he was just too lame. He was too lame a character.
But who's Frogman?
I'm looking him up now. Looks like he's the son of Leapfrog.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
I've never heard of Frogman.
Eugene Patillo of Brooklyn, New York.
Maybe Frogman is the good one, and Leapfrog is the bad one. Maybe that's what it is.
Maybe
he wanted to,
because Eugene is they're saying Eugene was the one you're talking about, Daryl. Eugene was the geeky kid.
Yeah, Eugene.
Kid.
That's what I'm thinking.
He was
of.
The geeky kid. He's the son.
That's who I'm thinking of, Eugene.
He donned his father's costume as a fabulous Frogman in an attempt to be a crime fighter to clear his father's name.
Yep, that. And I was thinking of Leapfrog, who was before that a bad guy stealing shit.
Yeah, that's his father, Vincent.
I remember Daredevil like trying to go after Leapfrog, and he would always miss. Like, he would go to swing his arms, and the frog would just bounce out. He'd just bing in the spring feet.
He also participated, along with Spider Kid and the Toad, in a short-lived super team called the Misfits. And it references Amazing Spider-Man number 266.
Of course.
Vincent Petillo was very proud of his son, yet at the same time very worried about him risking his life. He even prevented his son from joining the Defenders, even when it meant publicly humiliating him by literally dragging him from in front of the team in the media. And he was captured by Kraven the Hunter when he was collecting a zoo of animal-themed superhumans.
Nice.
That's awesome. All right, Mike, you want to talk about one?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the end of the Justice League of America. Justice League 111 through 113. So this was the book that originated from the Bwahaha team. Mm-hmm. It was Justice League International and then became Justice League America. It wasn't of America. It was Justice League America. Mm-hmm. And this was Gerald Jones and I can't pronounce this guy's name. Chuck Wadzetskowitz.
Good enough.
Yeah, that's close enough. But it was an interesting story. The reason I read them was because this wasn't my favorite Justice League at the time. And I never completed the run because I was like, God, this is just such a weird fucking story. And I finally did. I bought the last three issues of it. And it had some interesting concepts on it. It had this stuff that didn't... It's almost like they rushed the ending, because the next Justice League was Grant Morrison's Justice League. It's almost like they took a lot of plot threads and they just said, okay, we got to fucking end this book like right now. And they didn't like... They rushed a lot of plot threads, especially with the villains. They like introduced this one dude that wanted vengeance against the Justice League, and then nothing happened about it. They had this villains that were trying to take out the Justice League. They were called Arcana. They were like a bunch of businessmen and businesswomen that were like a secret society that was ready to fuck the Justice League. And then there was this weird thing in space called the Refuge. And the Refuge was this spaceship that was kind of like, you know, Brainiac would take all the worlds of aliens and collect them like the Collector in Avengers. These were the last beings of worlds, and this Refuge was a place they could be safe at. And it was led by this like pterodactyl or weird looking creature called Yaz. And half of the Justice League was up there, and then half of the Justice League was on Earth. And this Justice League consisted of Blue Devil, Wonder Woman, Flash, Nuklon, Obsidian, Power Girl, El Diablo. Crimson Fox was kind of in it, but not. It was just an odd group of characters. This one Catwoman, I don't remember what her name was. I think it was called Civil. And one of the other major villains was Lord Havoc. Which was a very big villain for Justice League Europe. Lord Havoc and his Extremites, I can't remember what they call them, Extremites?
That sounds right.
Yeah. And it was an unusual story. The plot is half the Justice League is trying to rescue the other half because the Refuge decides to take off, and it was part of Lord Havoc's and Arcana's plan to launch the vehicle into space. So it basically takes off at like light speed, and then they call Kyle Rayner in to like help. And this is before Kyle Rayner was ever in the Justice League, and he's kind of new using his ring. And he's like, "Well, I don't know how to track it. I've never done this before." And that's kind of weird because that was Grant Morrison's Green Lantern, was Kyle. But, yeah, it's weird, especially the El Diablo character. He actually looks like a human being, and then he turns into this like matador who's a demon. It's very, very unusual character, and it's like they put him in there, but he was a character that never got fleshed out. They even had Metamorpho in here at one point. And this is when he looked really weird, like he had crystals coming out of his shoulders and stuff like that. Power Girl's in like deep depression.
Mm-hmm.
Ice Maiden is back.
Right. I think it was when
Fire and Ice Maiden
got weakened.
She's weakened though because of her mind, I think. Like she thinks she's like going through a weird depression. It's weird.
Right.
She actually gets him back. She cuts loose in this because I guess she's never been fond of the Flash Wally because he would like tease her in Justice League Europe and shit.
Oh, he was an asshole back
then. He was an asshole. So there's one scene where they're all trapped and they have handcuffs on him to depower him. Well, Flicker is, I don't remember if you know Flicker. He actually is a slaver in the Green Lantern. And he's one of the major villains. He's actually the guy that saves them from the refuge taking off light speed because Yaz convinces Obsidian to go out there and find the nearest being that can help them. And he finds this slaver and he actually teleports him. He's got a teleport device to teleport everybody off that ship so he could sell their organs to people. But it is weird. And there's some weird stuff going on there because this isn't Tora. This is the other one that's Ice Maiden. And she's bisexual, and like Nuklon's trying to hit on her, and it's not working. So he's like, "Oh shit!" And Obsidian at this time is not gay. He was with Power Girl, if I remember correctly.
Well, he's bi actually.
But Nenny's totally gay now, right? Well, I mean, pre-52.
Manhunter.
He had a solid relationship with some guy.
Yeah, yeah. He was in love. He was in a, like, they wanted to get married, I think.
Well, that's weird because if he's bisexual, so is Ice Maiden, so they should hook up.
Why not?
Ice Maiden turned down Nuklon and wanted to go for Beatrice, you know, Fire. And right. Fire was hitting on, God, who was she with? Oh my God. I can't remember who Fire was with at the time.
I mean, they hinted at maybe you thought she and Ice.
Oh, she was with Guy Gardner Warrior.
Yeah, Ice was.
No, Fire at the end of this series. She was dating Warrior.
Oh, because he turned into more of
an. And it felt weird because.
Yeah.
Even though this Ice Maiden is not Tora, it's the other one.
Mm hmm.
She ended up dating her best friend's boyfriend.
She felt guilty about it, I think.
Yeah.
But
anyway, they all save the day. They defeat Flicker. Flicker actually saves them. They defeat Flicker, and they're back on Earth. And it's kind of like they're taking a break, and they don't disband. It's like they just show them all happy. But the way they escape is really Power Girl. Blue Devil just starts egging her on, like teasing the shit out of her, just like Flash would. Mm-hmm. Because when Flicker made the cuffs, he made them powered for what her power level was at the time.
Right.
And he knew she was depowered. So he was like, oh, Flash said this about you and about your boob window and all this stuff. And she just gets mad. She's like, oh, you're fucking shit. He starts making fun of her costumes. He's like, you had this gold costume that looked like shit. And then you had this one that I always made me think of the mountains. And, you know, he's just teasing the hell out of her. And this one, she had like a blue and white costume.
Right.
But she still had like a boob window, but it was triangular.
Yeah, it was like a diamond.
It was like a diamond. It was like a diamond right in the middle of the chest. Mm-hmm. That's weird how you remember that, Daryl. You like remember?
I'm a pervert. I already know. Like that, when I saw that on covers and stuff, I remember that window. It was a diamond to me.
Oh, and the other member of the Justice League that was in here that I forgot to mention was Hawkman. that warrior looking Hawkman. Yeah, with the leather gloves.
Yeah.
It's weird how whenever a Justice League volume gets towards the end, it's always a strange hodgepodge and mix up of more obscure characters. It's like every single time, you know, like you had the Detroit Justice League towards the end of the first volume, and then you have like this scenario, and then when it got to the end of before the New 52 launched, it was the same kind of deal, and then it's like sales start to go down, and they reboot everything with like more of like the traditional seven, you know.
It's yeah, cycle. This is really interesting too, because they ended all three Justice League books at the time: Justice League Task Force, Extreme Justice, and this one. And this one even had the other two Justice Leagues in it. They were trying to help get back the spaceship that launched into space. They were trying to help them, but none of them really helped them. Even Green Lantern with his ring tried to track it, and they ended up finding the Arcana group and defeating them. But it was really Yaz, that pterodactyl, that ended up saving them. And Yaz basically took all the aliens and said, you know, we're going to tour the world and we're not going to hover over the Earth anymore. You guys can't protect us. So.
Basically.
We're just going to take off. But it was pretty interesting. When I read number 111, I was kind of like, man, this is weird shit, man. It makes no fucking sense. But as soon as I started to see all the plot threads come together, I was into the story, and it was pretty interesting concepts. And they left a lot of like hanging threads. Like there was that Seville Catwoman character that was trying to get Crimson Fox back into being a superhero, and that never panned out. Like she. Crimson Fox was that twin, like she had two twins, and one of them was the head of like a cosmetic
business,
and that's how it ended up. She just went back into her cosmetic business, and but there's so it was cool seeing how all these things ended. It was just bizarre. Like I forgot that Fire was dating Warrior Green. You know,
yeah, I forgot that you said it. That's fucking weird,
and that. Ice Maiden was bisexual, and it's just some weird, weird stuff, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really dark area or a dark era for me, because I mean I've read some of the like beginning of that Justice League.
I think I lost you, Chris.
The success of the Bwahaha Justice League, they kept expanding, and they had like Justice League Quarterly too, and they had so many Justice League books.
Well, I think that's when they were successful. Like they had Justice League Quarterly, Justice League Europe, Justice League International, Justice League America. And that was like their successful run. And then once they brought out Task Force and Extreme Justice, and this became this what it was, it started to drop in sales like significantly.
Well, it's funny how that, you know, when you hear people complain about this is because this is they want a cash cow and this is they wanted to. That's always been comics. Like they've always wanted, when something was successful, they put a lot of other stuff out. Like, you know, Justice League was very popular at that time, so they put a lot of Justice League titles out, like, you know, annuals, all of it, like. Because they were trying to cash in on what was working.
Yep.
And then eventually it just kind of fell out.
Extreme Justice was like Blue Beetle, Booster, Firestorm, Captain Atom, and Maxima.
Was that was Blue Beetle with the big suit,
Amazing
right?
Man, yeah. No, Booster with the big suit.
I mean Booster, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because he lost his other suit in the fight with...
Yeah, that's when they had to like build him armor because Doomsday. he lost the ring and everything.
Yeah,
the flight ring destroyed. And all that future tech.
Well, and Titans, I mean, they did the whole they went through the kind of the same exact process with Titans.
That was even worse because they basically was like Marv Wolfman, you can't end. Like he was gonna leave. Like he was when they did the Titans hunt, he was on his way out to do other stuff with DC or whatever he was going to do. He was like, I was going to have eventually you'd see all the original people who have been in the Titans throughout the story. And that's his nice little send off.
Right.
And then they can end the book or whatever they were going to do. And they were like, this book is selling too much.
Yeah.
You cannot end this. Please keep doing it. And he was like, I don't have any other story to do. And they were they had him add another one where they added the time traveling. It was like another version of the Titans if things were changed from another dimension. So they had that, the Kronos, that whole thing with the Kronos War, that was just ridiculous. Like you could tell he was treading water, trying to keep that book going, and he didn't know because Titan Hunt sounds. It started out so good.
Yeah,
it started out so good.
Well, he said, I think, yeah, I read an interview too with him more recently where he was saying that prior to Titan's Hunt, he pretty much was done. Mm-hmm. And then they came up with the idea for that, and he said felt like that was the last time he got anything out of it that was any good. But if he could, he would just take back a lot of that, and if he could go back in time, he would have ended it earlier.
Yeah, it would have been I think he went into a year, 12 issues. It would have been a 12 issue story, and then it would have ended, and then they could have transitioned to a whole new team and have a whole new creative team come on and do the book. And they were like, I think when all said and done, it went another almost 3 years.
Yeah, something like that.
So it was something.
Yep.
I think I want to reread those too. Damn it. It's a lot of
Okay, so you said you just had that one right, Daryl?
Have others.
Go ahead.
I have a whole bunch of others. There was one. What was the one I read? Which issue was it? It was Batman. Was it Batman 219? And I read that too. No, it was Batman 316. Dick Grayson came back because in this continuity. What really happened was this was during the time when he was Nightwing, and this was after they teamed up with after the Outsiders and the Teen Titans had already teamed up that one time, and then and they had left in like they left in a fight, like the whole thing with Bruce getting into an argument with him and telling him you need to quit because you got shot and it's your fault. You're a failure as Robin. And he quit and he took this, he told him you could never wear the suit again. And then he was like, he left. And then eventually he found out Robin didn't know that he had, that he got a new ward. So he found out in the paper that there is a new Robin. And this was early when he took in Jason Todd. Wait, I'm stuck on this era of the Jason Todd stuff.
Are you talking 316 that has the crazy quilt on the cover?
Is it that one? Or am I mixing them up?
Well, it says guest starring Robin.
Yes, that is the one.
But
yes.
Crazy Quilt's like an odd character to put on there.
Yeah, he's a blind guy, too. He lost his sight in battle. He was a surgeon that lost his sight. So in the so you have the whole thing of them being at conflict. I think that's the one where they're in conflict with each other because of because he promised wasn't going to do another Robin. He was never going to have another Robin because it was too dangerous. And he was like, if you fire me, then that means, that means that you don't want anyone else to do this. And when he found out that Jason, that he had Jason, he was like, well, you're a hypocrite. And it was almost like when him and Dick talked, it was like they had a breakup. And now he's mad because he's dating somebody else. The way they worded it. It was just so emotional. It was like he had his back to Dick and he was like, he kept telling him, Dick said, take off the cowl and look at me. And he kept yelling at him to look at me and deal with this. And he was like, Bruce was like, I don't like dealing with, I don't like dealing with this stuff. And, they basically have a one-on-one out where he's basically like, you cut me out of your life. When I thought when you fired me from being Robin, I got that. But when you cut me out of your life completely, that's when I left and I went to the Titans and I found I came out of a depression and I found a family and and you know, we built something, and you know, and I tried to contact you and you wouldn't talk to me, and like, you know, and life had to move on without you. And then I come to find out this is what you do, Bruce. You always turn your back on, you know, you push people away when they try to get close to you. And like, it was a whole thing. And eventually he got into a fight with Jason because he jumped into it wasn't heroin. It was coke. There was a laboratory and he broke into it, but he didn't wait until they brought the coke in. So when he jumped in, he had to go and save him, and he told him that you have to think about what you do before you do it. You just can't, you know. This was the beginning of Jason actually starting to be pretty angry and impatient, and he was like, you know, is Batman gonna want the suit back and give it to Dick? And then eventually at the end, he went to Jason and he told him, he basically told him, here's my card, here's my suit. If you ever need to talk to someone, because I know Bruce has a hard time talking about things, and I've been where you are right now. If you ever want to talk again, just contact me. And, you know, I guess that would have been their friendship. You know, they would have been able to have a friendship if he didn't get killed so soon after that. Hmm. So it was a crazy time with Jason Todd, because they switched him. Like, at first he was very Dick Grayson like
yeah,
and then after Legends, before Legends, that's what he was, and then after Legends, I guess they were going through a transition where they were saying, we can't have him acting exactly like Dick Grayson, so they kind of went the route of, let's make him angrier.
And they had a stepmom, Nocturna, or whatever that was. That was weird.
It was a very weird thing. And little by little, they would do things to him to make him to be a very darker character. Like, they would have little conflicts, and eventually got to the point where people didn't like him. Mm-hmm. You know, people started to not like the character at all. And well, not all, because they didn't win by that many votes. I think it was a small window of votes that voted him to get killed. And actually, it looks like every time they talk about it, it's like they didn't even really count him.
I actually like him though, because I loved when he threw that dude off the fucking balcony.
He deserved it.
Yeah, he deserved to die. He was like that Lethal Weapon dude, diplomatic immunity. You motherfucker, I'll show you diplomatic immunity. I'll push you right out the fucking window.
Say hi to my little friend. Go out the window. I loved it. I don't think, you know what?
It was very different. And you're like, wow, this kid just threw this fucker out the window. That's pretty badass.
I really want to know what they would have done if they didn't kill him off and they just have him quit as Robin and transition to his own mantle of not Nightwing,
like a darker Winter Soldier type character or something.
Right, because it wasn't like he was coming out shooting. I hope they burn in hell. That was him. But I mean, because it wasn't like he was gonna be a gun-toting crazy man. I mean, he was sound in what he said. He really, the guy was gonna get away with murdering people.
Yeah,
you know, Jason fought for the little. I think it what really made Jason. They could have really did something with Jason because he grew up in poverty. Like, he was such the opposite of Bruce.
You know, he had nothing. He had steel hubcaps.
He really knew how it felt to be a part of the system. You go after these people, and you save people who are poor, but you will never understand what it's like to be poor, to grow up that way. And I think that would have on the streets. And I think that they could have really gotten into that whole dynamic.
Because Dick came from a circus. He probably wasn't poor.
No, he wasn't poor. They fed you.
That's when circuses made money.
They were the star. Well, they were the star of the circus. Yeah. So they were cool. They didn't have any problems.
And then Tim came from like a well-to-do family.
They were both rich. Basically, I mean, not rich, but they were intellectuals and they had money in the academic fields. They both were.
Damian came from the Ra's al Ghul's family, so he had a lot of money.
another rich kid.
Never had to worry about having food on his table or anything.
He never had to put money. He never had to put something on something. Never had to pay partial payments on something. He always had money. You know.
A spoiler, then, I think, came from some dark places. I mean, I don't think she was well-to-do. Her mom was a teacher or something like that.
Mother was a teacher. Father was a
Father was a criminal, but it was like she was distant from her father. Do you know what I mean?
Very distant.
Her father wasn't part of her life.
No, not at all.
But I don't think she had too much money, and she was robbing for a while.
Well, she went and got an abortion when she got pregnant.
Yeah.
She didn't even have the kid because she didn't think she could raise it. So, yeah, it was different. I really would have loved to have seen what they would have done with Jason Todd if somebody else had got a hold to him that wanted to use him. What they would have did with him.
Yeah, if it's just that one vote, just that Chris Ivey vote that last minute vote that said kill him.
That Chris Ivey vote, that's what did it.
Yeah.
What did I do? How did I get involved in that?
You made that one phone call to kill Jason Todd.
It was that one vote.
I'm like, I don't even read DC Comics. I don't even know what the hell this is all about. They should
just
kill
dial
them
the
all.
Number. Is this the right number?
Just kill them all.
It sounds like the wrong number, and then you hit the wrong. You just hit a number.
You didn't even listen to the recording.
Is this the Marvel subscription service? I want to. Renew my Spider-Man
subscription. I better hit one for kill.
Hit one.
DC Comics. Kill it.
Sure.
Kill it.
All right, Chris. What do you got?
Yeah, I see a lot of things through the filter of, like, you're talking about Crimson Fox, and I still see her through the filter of my childhood eyes of, like, scanning past the DC covers and wondering who the hell is that person, you know? Because yes. She still looks bizarre.
She had a very bizarre character, and Bart Sears, like, is the one that drew a lot of her.
Oh yeah.
But so that
always a lot of drama with her,
really?
And her sister. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like one of those characters that was big in the 80s, and I would see these characters on covers and stuff like that. But as I've talked about before, I didn't really read much DC when I was a kid, so it's I'm familiar with the image of them, but don't know much about them. And then there's a lot of stuff that I've caught up on as an adult, but then there's still those areas where I still just have that kind of, like, I still remember that impression I had of them as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But talking about things I did read, though, like, so that Avengers Spotlight issue, that was 89, and I've been reading stuff for a couple of years by that point, but this issue is definitely one of the very, very first that I got, just in, like, packs from the stuff that my parents bought, and this is like 86, Daredevil 235. And honestly, like, not much of this came back to me reading it. The cover is burned into my memory. The cover has Mr. Hyde lifting up, like, part of a building about to toss it onto Daredevil, who's in the grounds on fire and stuff, and there's, like, crowds in the background and stuff. But the issue itself, I didn't remember too much, but, like, when I go back to these, I like to kind of look, you know, when I was a kid, I just picked these up and just read them and just whatever it happened to be. And, you know, I didn't have any of my own money. I couldn't go buy other issues around it. I just had to read what I had. But now it's like with the internet and everything, I can, like, research the context around it and stuff. And it's kind of interesting to me. So what I noticed this time was that this was very, like, transitional, and there's a lot of, like they're reintroducing the character. It's like a jumping on point, which is just coincidental for me as a reader. But it was written by Danny Fingeroth, and it actually has Steve Ditko as the breakdown artist, and with finishes by Danny Bulanati. Max Scheel colorist, who that's actually a female who's using the nickname Max. She was the colorist on the Thor issue that I also that I wrote about this week on Taylor Network. But it's called A Safe Place, and so I was looking, I'm like, how this had been pretty. This was pretty close to when Miller and Mazzucchelli left the book, and it was actually two issues before 233 was their last one. So 234 and this issue were like fill-ins in between that and Ann Nocenti coming on the book for years. Because 236, she's actually the writer. So there's these two in-between issues. The one before this, 234, also had Steve Ditko on art, but it was written by Mark Gruenwald. Ditko's really the only carryover. Well, Ditko and Scheel, the colorist. So as you're reading it, you know, it's interesting because it's very, there's very much like new reader friendly, but it also makes reference to what's gone on with the Frank Miller run. So in the beginning, Daredevil's just fighting some random crooks and stuff like that. He's breaking up. They're trying to steal famous paintings, and Daredevil's thoughts. He even goes over his origin. As he's thinking through it and contemplating, and throughout he's just, you know, I don't want to go over the edge again. I don't want to go over the edge. I gotta, like, I'm not just Daredevil. I'm Matt Murdock too. Recently, you know, so at one point he says, recently the distinction between the two identities blurred. I went over the brink. The balance of my life was destroyed. And so was I until I restored that balance. So he's like, I gotta, it's getting late. I gotta get back. He's with Karen Page at this point. So he's like, I gotta get home to Karen. But then he's like, you know, he passes by a bar that he often goes in to get information and stuff, and attempts him to keep the night going, to keep fighting as Daredevil, even though he's trying to have more of a balance with his regular life. And but he decides he's going to go into Josie's bar and take down some crooks and get some and do some investigating, some information. So meanwhile, Mr. Hyde, he takes out an armored van and takes off before some super SWAT soldiers. Or super SWAT police officers come along. They're outfitted in shield weaponry, and then we see, you know, Mr. Hyde gets away and he ducks around the corner and he goes to take his formula to turn back into his regular identity, so that he can get away. You know, it's just kind of like a way for him to change back into his normal persona so that he's not recognized, and it doesn't work. So the police end up catching up with them, and he's got to fight a bit, and he's even has to drop the money that he's got, and he's heads back to his laboratory a couple hours later and tries to figure out what's going on with this formula, why he can't change back into Calvin Zabo, and he's testing out all these formulas and getting pissed off. He goes through like 10 tries and he throws the test tube on the floor and wants to figure it out. So we switch back to Daredevil and we find out that Daredevil, he's gotten some info from being on the at the bar that that Mr. Hyde, he's heard about Mr. Hyde's robbery attempt and everything. So he's thinking to himself, like, well, I guess I can't let this information sit. I got to go back. I got to stay out. I can't go home. I got to track down Mr. Hyde. So he comes up to Mr. Hyde's laboratory just as he's finally perfected the formula and he's got it up to his lips. He's about to drink the formula and turn back into Calvin Zabo when crash, Daredevil comes through the skylight and they fight, and it causes the test tube to break, so that Mr. Hyde is stuck as Mr. Hyde. He says, "Thank you. I was about to make a I was about to let weak emotions blind me and make a huge mistake." You know, so they get in a fight, and Daredevil gets thrown out the window, uses his, it's kind of a neat sequence where actually you get into his head a little bit, where, you know, in less than a second, he assesses all the sensory input and gauges his options, pushes himself off window ledge toward a nearby flagpole, and then lands on the ground. You see that a lot, but it's effectively done to show how Daredevil uses his senses to deal with situations like that. But so he leads Hyde to a courtroom to kind of get some of the like dramatic attention of the fact that he's a lawyer and he's dealing with his identity right now. Turns off the lights and stuff so that he can have the advantage over Mr. Hyde, and then is able to eventually take him out by leading him back out onto the streets and down into the subway, where he kind of has some flashbacks of his origin again, and uses the like electrical charge on the rail line to fry Mr. Hyde, knowing that, you know, with his physique, it's not going to kill him and stuff. But finally, you know, his work's done for the night, and he goes home. So then we see in the last page, we have Matt Murdock and Karen Page walking down the street, and it kind of a funny foreshadowing unintentionally of like the future. There's a guy who walks up, he says, "Daredevil? You're Daredevil, aren't you, Matt Murdock?" So for a second there, you think, what the, you know, is somebody recognizing him in his secret identity? And he's like, "You remember me, don't you, Stinky McQuaid?"
I remember Stinky.
Yeah, so he's like,
"I remember Stinky."
Yeah.
Comes out of key sass.
Stinky McQuaid. Yeah, I was going to say, Stinky McQuaid, he's part of DC Noise, right?
Yeah, he is.
You know it.
That's his alias.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Stinky Knutson. But, yeah, so what actually it turns out is, you know, for Daredevil's origin, like part of the reason he took the name Daredevil was because the kids used to tease him and call him Daredevil as like an ironic, like with the irony, because he was like super cautious, didn't want to play with the other kids and stuff. And so it's actually somebody from back in the day that used to tease him and call him Daredevil. Didn't actually recognize him as a superhero, but so it's kind of a little resolution from Matt, because he says, "Hey, you know, just wanted to say that I feel like a jerk about the way that we teased you, especially after you, I heard you went blind after saving that old guy from that truck. So a few years after that, down the road, me and my buddies, we got into trouble with some cops, and I finally buckled down, remembered how you used to study and everything like that when we were kids, and really, you know, were serious about the books and stuff. So now I'm an accountant. I got a nice house in Great Neck and a wife and three kids. And I just came back to the old neighborhood to get a pastry. That's the big excitement in my life now, coming here to get a cannoli. But anyways, just want to let you know, we were just having fun with you back in the old days. It wasn't anything personal and everything." So
it's like a thing to, he doesn't know his identity. He just happened to call, they used to call him that.
Yeah, he's like the reason.
So it's just a coincidence, but he's like, "What? You know my identity?"
Yeah, for a second, then he's like, "Oh."
It's like to throw something at you from. Yeah.
Mark Waid did the same similar thing with him. But he didn't have to do the "I know who you are," because now everybody knows he's Daredevil, basically. But the guy that beat up on him and stuff, it was in that, it had to be the same group. He got caught up with the Sons of the Serpent.
Oh yeah, I read that too. Yeah,
and it was the same deal. But the kind of twist on it with Mark Waid was, he gets so caught up in the how they bullied him
when the guy said, well, you were an asshole when you were in school. Don't you remember what you used to do? Right. And he used to say, yeah, I'm not going to be like you guys. You know, you poor stiffs. I'm going to be a lawyer. Like, mm-hmm. And that was, and they showed, like, from the guy's perspective, that's all he talked about. Like, I'm going to be, you know, like, I'm so smart. I'm going to study. I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm not going to be, you know, broke and running around and not have a life. I'm going to be something special.
Yeah.
Like, and he kept saying it, and it was like, you made us feel like crap
mm-hmm.
when we were growing up. And it was just a weird, it's just funny to see that he kind of went into that and did his own take on that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. So yeah, it's a different take on it, but yeah, it's kind of neat how different writers have used his origin.
Yeah. Cause he's always placed as the guy that was bullied, but mm-hmm. he stood up for himself. And that was the first time I ever saw it where, well, maybe Matt, you were kind of a bully yourself in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the way that you were talking about people, the way you would talk to people.
Yeah. I remember reading that thinking like, it was kind of neat how, cause I could identify with how, you know, when you get older, you have a certain way that you remember things when you're a kid. And mm-hmm. then sometimes you have like, whether you run into somebody you used to know, or like you just have a conversation with somebody and you start to realize that like you were too young to see things from anybody else's perspective. But then you get older and you look back and like, you realize like other people, you're a little bit more open to see what other people's perspective was at the time.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, yeah, it was cool.
Like maybe I was an asshole.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a neat snapshot. I mean, it was interesting to read just to see, oh, this is, you know, this is what introduced me to Daredevil, you know? And it was funny how the first Daredevil comic I ever read just happened to have his origin and stuff recapped, you know? It's like, now I could tell you off the top of my head what the deal with Daredevil is, but, I was just lucky that the first book I picked up happened to tell me what the deal was.
Well, it worked how they wanted it to, because that's mm-hmm. when editors would always say I think they had a certain number of issues where they would be like, you have to have a recap. Mm-hmm. You know, every 10 or so issues, you got to put a recap in there for people that might be picking it off the stands and they want to, you know, and they don't know.
Especially yeah. in this case, because it was a transition.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's right smack into that, you know, beginning of Ann Nesenti run. So.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So that
actually worked.
The next issue, 236, was one of the 25th anniversary covers that I didn't have. I ended up with a whole bunch of those in my early comics where they had the portrait and then the border with all the different Marvel characters. And the Daredevil one was one that I didn't have. But yeah, that was so the first Ann Nesenti story called American Dreamer was actually, and it has Barry Windsor Smith on as artist. So, but yeah, so interesting time snapshot, Daredevil. Because Ann Nesenti, she'd stay in the book for a long time.
Yeah, she did. I always wonder what, like, I used to enjoy so many of those Daredevil stories she did then. And mm-hmm. I've read, you know, her run on Catwoman. And and I go, why is it so different? Like, her.
I actually like it. I like her katana in Catwoman.
I didn't like
it. It is very different. I will admit
her style of writing is so jarring. It's
kind of jarring, but if you get into it, it's pretty.
She seemed to be so ahead of the curve back then.
Mm-hmm.
She seemed to be so ahead of the curve back when she was doing Daredevil. And now it just seems like.
But I think she might be leaving Catwoman.
Yeah, she is.
She's for sure.
She's going to go work, what do you call it, the demon character. I can't forget what that kid is.
Oh, Claire. The court, the kid, the...
The Kirby character.
Clarion.
Yeah, what is his name? I can't stand that guy.
Chris just said it. Clarion.
Yeah. Clarion.
Yeah, he's such an emo. He's such an emo hipster. He's an emo boy.
Yeah, even when Kirby did him, it was like proto hipster.
Yeah, he was. He was like that too. He certainly, that's what he was. He knew.
It's like a Knutson hipster.
Yeah, but Knutson's not a bad hipster. He's a hipster. He's not one of those. He's not that condescending hipster. Uh-uh. Can't stand. We love him.
He was hipster years before.
Exactly. He was hipster when he didn't know it was cool to be, supposedly cool to be hipster.
But yeah, I wonder, it's interesting. Like, I don't know if it's, you know, because, you know, Senti, she took a long break from comics, where she did a little bit in the 90s, like here and there. But she mostly was a journalist and stuff, so it's like her style maybe changed while she was away from comics, or she just wants to do like different things. But I mean, but yeah, she did a lot of good work when her run. I mean, she's the one that created Typhoid Mary.
She was ahead of her time. Like, I thought she really brought the adult into. She updated a lot of those characters and wrote a very adult version of Daredevil stories. Like Typhoid Mary's story was just very adult, like very, very mature themed.
Yeah, there was a lot of social issues like that Daredevil dealt with, like
schizophrenia, you know, and
Daredevil did the, like, he had the not for, like, he was doing like social justice stuff, like as a lawyer and stuff outside of being Daredevil. Like, he did the not-for-profit, like urban, like legal, he was given like legal advice for free and stuff like that, and like doing stuff for the community as Matt Murdock and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Typhoid Mary was bipolar before they was bipolar. Like, she was she was the poster child for bipolar disorder.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool. Pretty cool issue, just a snapshot of the time. So,
all right. My next book is kind of related to the other. Not coincidentally, I just picked some books out of a box, but it's Infinity Inc. number 2, and there's linkage there. There's linkage between all of my books. This is from, let's see, the one I just talked about was from 1996. This is from 1984. So this is the team of kids that come out of the Justice Society, and they actually try to join the Justice Society, and they're kind of rejected. They have like a vote in the first issue, and kind of like in the Jason Todd vote, and they vote them to not be members. So they kind of go do their own thing along with Star Spangled Kid, because Star Spangled Kid says, "Hey, I wanted to always move out to California, and I always wanted to form my own team. So why don't you guys join me?" And the team is Silver Scarab, which is an ancestor of Hawkman, Fury, who's an Amazon, whose last name is Trevor, so she's related that way. Northwind, who's kind of like a Hawkman type character. He's got wings. Nuklon, which is an ancestor of the Atom. And then Jade and Obsidian, which are son and daughters of the original Green Lantern. And Power Girl and Huntress seem like they kind of might be members. They're listed as members, but Huntress doesn't want to leave Gotham. You know, she's the Wayne Huntress, and Power Girl wants to, you know, go with Star Spangled Kid. So they kind of form their own team, and then along with that, Brainwave comes along, the son of Brainwave, and he tries to join the JSA, kind of, and they turn him down. Matter of fact, they actually attack him. The whole JSA think he's actually Brainwave, which is right. which is a villain of the Justice Society of America. But Brainwave says, "Hey, I got this link to a villain, and we could stop him. And that villain is the Ultra Humanite, which we actually will. He actually shows up in Legends of the DC Universe, which I'll talk about next. And that's the linkage of all the books. But it's a pretty good book. This is written by Roy Thomas with art by James Ordway. And it's a very coming together as a team kind of issue. And there's a lot of angst between the personalities. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they do is, as they get rejected, they're upset. And they decide to go eat at McTavern's, which is like a McDonald's. And there's a lot of weird characters in this. There's like pimps outside and hookers all over and weird people inside. And he says, let's go eat there. They won't think of us eating in costume. And this one prostitute tries to pick up on Northwind and starts to play with his feathers, and then all hell breaks loose. And there's a huge fist fight between a bunch of pimps and hookers and Infinity Inc. And Huntress and Power Girl kind of break it up.
Isn't that something? Homeless people pooping in the bathroom?
Yeah, that's what's happening.
Wasn't that crazy, though, the way that, you know, that they're New York? Like, you could even walk around in costume, and that's okay. It's no big deal. Yeah. Because everybody was wild and crazy back then. Everybody had that look to it. It's funny how they didn't have a lot of, besides Martian Manhunter, there were not a lot of superheroes that use any type of mind powers.
Yeah, except for like this brainwave and Ultra Humanite.
But he's thought of as bad.
Yeah. This brainwave is the sun, and he's supposedly good.
And he goes crazy a lot.
But yeah, he does. An Ultra Humanite actually uses him to try to bring Infinity Inc. together, where mm-hmm. he can use the majority of the team, like Nuklin, Obsidian, Jade, Northwind, right. Silver Scarab, and Fury as weapons. And then he leaves the other ones behind. Like, he doesn't take Power Girl and Huntress mm-hmm. or Star Spangled Kid, who will change his name eventually to Skyman. And he actually dies in this series. But yeah, it's interesting. So Brainwave ends up back in time in World War II area in 1942, and he tries to find out what the hell just happened because he knows he needs to rescue the other members. And the first person he goes to is, I got to find somebody in this time that I know of. And he says, I read about a guy, Jonathan Law, and he used to be called the Tarantula, so he's going to go try to hook up with Tarantula. And it's pretty cool shit, man.
Yeah, nice. Definitely.
Next.
Right. What's your time? Like, are you recording a regular Geek Brunch today?
No.
Oh, okay, cool. Did you have another one you want to talk about, Daryl?
Yeah, I did a Titans run. New Teen Titans. I've been going back and rereading that, and I read the... Nice. The first three issues. I'm up to when the Justice League guest stars. I'm reading that one mm-hmm. currently, but I finished 1-3, and Grant, which is Deathstroke's son, mm-hmm. Grant Wilson. That whole thing with him, his girlfriend, and domestic violence. Like, it is so. This book, again, there's another DC book where you think in that time they didn't deal with a lot mm-hmm. of issues that were very poignant at the time and still now, but they did. I mean, you know, they dealt with his girlfriend Carol and they breaking up mm-hmm. and how he was very, very possessive and abusive and he basically was like, I'll be a supervillain just to take out the Titans because they made my girlfriend break up with me. Not because I was an asshole and was doing terrible things to her, but you know, yeah. It was their fault. How dare Wonder Girl and Starfire tell me what to do? And then they really get into, they're still, the team is still early, so they're still trying mm-hmm. to figure out, like, even the first issue, it took
two issues before they can even get her to learn English, before she kisses Dick and gets English, you know, learns
the
language.
She kisses Dick?
She kisses Dick because that's how she has to her people to learn.
No wonder the book became so popular.
Yeah, I'm saying. Like it's, and that book is filled with so much sexual innuendo all over the place. Like it's just it's full of sex. There's conversations with Donna and Starfire about being naked in public and why is it a big deal for you on Earth.
And that's so weird how when the New 52 was launched, so many people complained about that incarnation. And then you can go back and read this stuff, and it's sex up the ass.
And you want to talk about pervert, Changeling, Gar. Yeah. He was like, I just need to get laid. Like
he's a total horn dog, yeah.
He was all the time. He was coming on to Wonder Girl and Donna and Starfire. He was like, well, when you finish kissing Dick, you want to kiss me? I can show you more language. He's like, he started saying, I know a whole bunch of other languages I could show you while they're making out. And
they wrote him like he was going through puberty right then.
Oh my gosh, man, he did. And just the whole thing of Starfire was sold by her parents to another people as a slave. She was basically a sex slave. They don't, you know, like they didn't get deep into what happened to her, but she was forced into pretty much prostitution. They did all types of things to her. They abused her sexually, physically, and to be sold by your parents? Mm-hmm. I mean, even though it's to stop a war, but that's some deep shit to be sold by your parents to another group. You know, and there are places where they do that. I mean, they have to give their children away or whatever, and how they, you know, to another conquering group. Mm-hmm. And whatnot, but it was just something to see them, and then Wally is he's so love smitten by Raven that every time Robin is like, you know, Raven, you keep appearing out of nowhere with a cloak on, telling us what we should do, but we don't even know who you are, and every time he's like, you know what, I'm not doing another thing till you tell me what's really going on, and Wally punches him in the face.
Yeah.
His best friend. He just met Raven. He got pussy whipped.
He was under her spell.
He was and she slept with him. To get him to listen to her, she slept with him when he was in college to get him to leave college, because he wouldn't leave. He was like, I don't want to be a superhero anymore. I want to go to college and have a normal life. And she pretty much seduced him and slept with him, and then knowing he would fall in love with her, to get him to be on this team. Like, this is shit that, like, this is some really some dark shit to do at this time.
Yeah, I think there was, like a mystical component of it, too. Like, she had him under, like a spell, because later on, like, that has a lot of, they have a lot of problems when
she comes out of
it.
It. He kept questioning, like, am I under her, like, did she do something to me? Mentally, like, am I under her spell? And then he gets to a point where he's like, I don't even care. Like, he turned on the whole team. And, like Robin, you knew for years, and you're just being a complete dick to people. And all they're doing is asking, like, what is your deal? Like, what, like, you disappear and you mention Azrath and you don't explain stuff. And then you tell us, some weird shit about, we have to beat the Justice League because they're going to do something that's going to cause the end of the world. So we have, like, how crazy does that sound? I have to fight people that I've known for years. These are our superheroes. Some of them are family to some of them. Mm-hmm. And you're telling us that just on a person we just met that we have to go and beat them because they're going to end the world.
Yeah.
And we're questioning it. And Wally is just like an idiot fighting with everybody and getting mad. He's like, I don't even like these guys. He's like, I don't even know why I'm helping them. I don't even like these guys. And I'm like, if you want to know somebody who's got pussy whipped, Wally is pussy whipped for sure, especially as early on. But even rereading it, it's still, I still love the book. Like, it doesn't feel dated to me, even rereading this. And a lot of the stuff of identity and trying to figure out, you know, you're on that point of your life where you're in your, you know, you remember, like, you're in your point in your life and you're in your early teens to your 20s, and you're really trying to figure out what you want to be, what direction you want to go into. And you got to stop blaming your parents for all the shit that you, that didn't go right, because that was Cyborg's thing. Like, at every issue, he blamed his father for everything. If the sun went down wrong, it was his father's fault. And it, like, it was just so much of that. And he, eventually he had, like, they really, he really made them have to grow up. Him and George Perez, they really put these kids through a point where they really had to learn to be adults and to grow out of, you know, their comfort zones, because they were all in their little, they were all coming out of their comfort zones, you know, that they had, being sidekicks and things like that. And so this, I just really enjoyed it, reading it.
Yeah, I've read that Wolfman kind of gave Perez the lead on Cyborg because of where his, like, Wolfman didn't really, like, come up in the way that Perez did. Perez came up, like, he kind of came from, he felt that he came from a similar background to Cyborg growing up.
Right.
Like, Perez had a lot of input into, like, Cyborg's background and his, like, his family and stuff like that. And that they kind of, like, intentionally from the start, they wanted to introduce him as seeming like he fit the angry young black man stereotype. And then, like, they always intended that they were going to flip it on its head and show how, like, he was just angry at this situation that he was in. And then once that was reconciled, you would see that Cyborg, like, didn't really fit the stereotype. It was more of like a, like an intellectual character.
Then they ran out of stuff to do with him to a point. Like, they would reboot him. They had him, they had him get destroyed, and then they rebuilt him, but they kind of, they did with kind of what they did with Vision. Like, when they John Byrne had him disassembled and rebuilt, and then he was more robot than human. And then eventually he had to fight through that, and then they reached his humanity again. They kind of did that with, as the years go went by and then George Perez left the book, they kind of did that with Cyborg, where he was destroyed and then rebuilt. It happened to him again in Titans, Titans Hunt, where he was basically almost destroyed completely, and then they rebuilt him, but then they rebuilt him wrong, because they, you know, they left out that part of him that, you know, and then they reprogrammed him, basically. They mind-wiped him, and then he was more robot, and he eventually got his powers back. And he even got booted into a planet, Terminus or whatever I think the planet was. And he, it was just, a, yeah, they did a lot of stuff with him. But they really didn't know what the, you know, he, you could tell that they really wasn't sure where to go with him after he got over his issues with his parent, who was his father.
Yeah, well, they had for a while, like earlier on, before they got, like you said, they started kind of doing that. That the storyline that they have coming up with, from where you're at with the girl,
Sarah, you talking about?
Yeah, that he never really, they never really become a couple. And,
like, yeah, that was on purpose. Like, that was supposed to be, he was supposed to be showing that a male and a woman can be friends without it getting romantic, and that was supposed to be the deal with that. And he fell in love with that technician working at Star Labs.
Yeah, they had the kids that Sarah was, I like that, where she works with kids that have prosthetics, prosthetic limbs and stuff like that, and, like, it ends up, like, kind of making him feel even more comfortable with his, like, him being a cyborg and stuff.
Right.
And these kids look up to him and stuff. I like how the kids look up to him.
It was bugged out how in the book that finally got finished, the Teen Titans book that no one ever thought would get done, they kill her off.
Games or
yeah,
what it's
in
called?
games, they actually that story was actually when they kill her off in games. That was the storyline. It was so weird that he did that in that book.
Yeah, I wonder if that was the plan all along for that, because that
He
took
said
a
in
long
the
time.
thing
They
that
were working on it.
he said in the thing that that was what he was thinking to do was to kill her off, but it just never came together, and it just never happened that way. But it just wound up being something that he since games he said he's finished it up and he got a chance to do that story, but it just felt so out of the loop to kill her off like that, because it's basically a terrorist act. It was very, very weird. Very, very, very weird.
Yeah, I love Teen Titans.
I always love them.
So good. But yeah, and they had actually Cyborg, they had that towards it before Tales of the Teen Titans became a reprint. They have that cover where he's like looks wholly human again. All his technology is gone, and they had that whole thing where they kind of like came up with he still had his technology in him, but it looked briefly they had the technology where it looked like real skin and stuff, but then things go wrong with that. It kind of actually another thing that Cyborg reminds me of is when they always go through the storylines with the Thing and how he
That's
comes.
exactly what I was about to go with. It's they have a similar
I'm a monster
when it
kind of
becomes
thing.
right.
Yeah, he goes back to
Every
looking like Ben Grimm again.
things are gonna go wrong, because every time they get some happiness, they have to fuck with them and make them sad again.
They did. I mean, with the Thing, like I read the early Fantastic Four issues a while ago, and again, and they did that like in the first like five issues, like like he briefly Reed comes up with something briefly that turns him back, and that's how actually it was with the first Puppet Master storyline with the what's her face, Alicia.
That's what they're doing now, currently with the
That's
Puppet
exactly what
Master.
they're doing. I
Is
just read
it?
it yesterday, the latest one where they put him in jail.
But yeah, so she's like, she meets him first as the Thing. So he's like, when he's turned back, she's like, she doesn't seem right to her. And then he t starts turning back into the Thing, and he's upset. But like his voice changes as and along with it, and she's like, "Oh, you are the one that saved me." Okay, but.
What's so weird is that
You can still turn back like one day a year now, right?
Yeah, you can still do that,
And
but it
that's fucking weird because you have like Reed who could do just about anything.
anything.
He can't turn back his friend, and he invent like even in the original Sin, he invented that machine. And yeah, Johnny fucked with the calibration, but can't you just recalibrate it?
Well, remember when he was supposed to be there, the whole thing where they played with it, where he was supposed to be able to change back and forth between being the Thing and Ben Grimm. And the only thing holding him back was like Power Girl's thing, where his mind was the only thing holding him back. Like, he felt he was a monster, and that's what kept him from being able to change back. But it was always in the DNA, his DNA, that he would be able to control the change, just like Doctor Strange. Just like Human Torch, he can turn the fire on and off. Same thing with Sue. Why is it that out of all of them, he's the only one that can't turn the power on and off?
It's probably because it makes an interesting story.
Well, that's why they got away from it. But in
Ultimately,
the
yeah.
original run, they were supposed to do that. He was supposed to figure out that he could do that. He would actually be able to change back and forth too. It was just that he was too stupid to realize he could do it. He never tried. He never tried to change back. Like, somebody would say to him, "Did you ever try to
Did you ever
concentrate?"
try to like say thing off?
Right. Have you ever tried? And
Do
he's
the
like,
opposite of flame on, just thing off.
yeah, thing off.
The thing that cracked me up about that first Puppet Master story is that like the whole his whole plot is based on the fact that his daughter Alicia looks like almost exactly like Sue Storm. So it's like, and that issue like really hammers it home that like Alicia Masters and Sue Storm, like you can hardly tell the difference between the two of them. And then later on, his her, you know, Johnny marries Alicia. So it's like it's one of those things where like you have enough time in between the storylines and like they don't really call attention
to it.
Marries
his own sister.
Yeah, if and they don't like talk about it when later on, but if you know that old story, it's like. Yeah,
so
it's like
weird.
It makes it kind of creepy because you're like, wait a minute, isn't this?
She was a Skrull, though, right?
Yeah, she wound up being a Skrull.
That's still
the one
pretty
he married was.
That's still pretty fucked up though because he didn't know.
It's fucked up for Johnny, but it's not fucked up for Alicia because she never did.
Oh
that.
No, it's not her fault.
Yeah, not
I mean,
her
even
fault.
If it wasn't a Skrull, it's not her fault that Ben decided to go off into space and cut their relationship like that. You know, it's just kind of weird that you know Johnny would. Do that when he could have almost any woman in the world.
Well, they were determined to make Johnny feel seem like an asshole. Like he would go through points where they really were determined to be like, Johnny, you're an asshole. You're really inconsiderate of other people. Like to do that. Like that was a run of that. Like he just didn't get it. Like every issue, he'd be like, "What's the problem? I said sorry. Like, why are you mad still? You're not supposed to be mad still." Like, he thinks when he says sorry, everything is fine.
Yeah. There are people like that, too.
Oh, they are.
I said sorry.
I mean, yeah, I shot you, but sorry.
I said sorry. Why doesn't
get over
it.
I mean, yeah, you stop bleeding. I mean,
said
you
the
went to
magic
the doctor.
Word.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll do my last one. Iron Man 251. This is back to the Acts of Vengeance, and it's Iron Man up against the Wrecker of the Wrecking Crew. And this is actually unintentionally, I got another Dwayne McDuffie written issue here, and another one penciled by a guy who was kind of later on in their career, Herb Trimpe.
Oh yeah.
Inked by Al Milgrom, colored by Paul Becton.
I love the inks on this and that. In this run of books, his inks were so good.
Wrecked him. He nearly killed him. That's the name of the story. And so, you know, Rhodey is back to support.
Duty.
Yeah, because. Tony Stark is Iron Man, and it starts off they're saving. There's a problem on a bridge, and a car is about to fall off the bridge. So Iron Man saves the family and stuff, and it's kind of funny. Like a couple people get out of the car. This guy's like, "Hey, look, it's snowing." And Iron Man says, it's not snow. It's particulate from the debris I destroyed. Don't let it get in your eyes. But in the foreground, there's this kid, like, looking up in the sky, his mouth's open and stuff. I'm just like, that's probably not good for you there, kid. But Iron Man, he goes back to the futuristic-looking ship that Rhodey is piloting. So, they go to this new venture that Tony's got set up, Stark Prosthetics. I guess maybe Sarah works there from the Teen Titans. And the ship that they got actually is called Tony's Folly. But who he meets there and who he's Tony's got set up as his director of research and development is this guy named Curtis Carr, he's actually got a prosthetic foot because he used to be a supervillain called Chemistro, and he lost his foot in an accident while he was Chemistro. So he's like he's heading up this project.
Chemistro sounds like a Power Man and Iron Fist villain.
Yeah, I don't
I
know
if it is.
He's a black guy. I know that.
Yeah, I remember him in Power Man and Iron Fist.
Yeah, he might have been. Yeah, I don't know too much of the history of the character myself, but so while they're there, we see that Wrecking, the Wrecker, is spying out the place, and it actually does have like a little editor's note that that refers back to Avenger Spotlight 26, because what the Wreckers basically wanted to, he's got hired, you know, by Tony Fisk to go after Iron Man, and the money he's gonna get will be enough for him to get Thunderball back up with him, and then they can bust the rest of the Wrecking Crew out of the vault, because they didn't make it out before they shut things down again and stuff. So he's like, well, I gotta get Tony's attention somehow. So he rips an entire tree out of the ground and throws it at the prosthetic building, so it like smashes into the side of the building that they're in. So Rhodey says, you know, Tony, go see if you can get some help, and AKA go turn into Iron Man. And meanwhile, Rhodey gets like, takes charge and sends a lot of the civilians out of the exit. And he helps unearth this guy that gets buried in avalanche of debris and stuff. And this is that time I always find it funny. It always looks kind of funny when Tony's got his Iron Man armor in a little briefcase. Mm-hmm. And it just never works, like, dimensionally, like, when they show the size of the briefcase. And, I mean, they're trying something here where he's thinking to himself, it only takes a moment for my armor's magnetic beam generators to turn this material from a supple chainmail into a rigid, strength-amplifying environmental suit. So they're trying to make it make more sense than when they didn't even bother.
It's the Nolan wings. But... it's like the Nolan bat wings, how it when you put a current through it.
Yeah.
They stiffen. That's basically what they were doing in the early on, you were saying.
Yeah. So, I mean, at least they're trying to make have it make sense. But
yeah, they try.
Iron Man heads back in, and it's actually, I don't know what you would call this, amputee humor or something, or I don't know, but Iron Man flies Rhodey and the guy that Rhodey rescued from the debris out of the building, and because everything's coming down, and Iron Man says, can you feel your legs, Mr. Muganis? No. Well, we'll get you some help, don't worry. And Mr. Muganis says, I'm not worried, I couldn't feel them before.
Duh.
So he's like, I don't know what that's that's weird. It was a weird humor.
Well, they were
there. That was kind of funny. Yeah.
It was a prosthetic thing, so I guess.
So it's not out of nowhere, but I just thought, it was funny. But Wrecker finally gets his attention. He's got a thing with trees this issue. He throws another one and completely destroys Iron Man's ship, and then he grabs up another he grabs it up again, and it's on fire because of the ship exploding. So he's holding this tree that's on fire like a baseball bat, wants to hit Iron Man with it, but Iron Man smacks him in the head. But so they, you know, they have their fight, and that takes up a big bulk of the issue, basically. But there's kind of some cool stuff at the end, though, with Curtis Carr, Curtis and Rhodey are kind of like bystanders to the situation, because it's way too high powered for normal humans. And so Rhodey says, "Come on, Curtis, we gotta help him somehow, though." And Curtis says, "You're right," and then starts running in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And Rhodey's like, "What the hell?" Calls him a coward and stuff. He's like, "All right, well, it looks like it's just you and me." But I like this. I mean, Rhodey, you know, he's just a normal guy running in there, no protection, and trying to distract the Wrecker. But Iron Man tells him, "Man, you got to get out of here. Get everyone as far away from the parking lot as possible." And Rhodey doesn't want to, but Iron Man commands him to, and because he just doesn't, like, at this point, it's not looking good for Iron Man, so Rhodey doesn't want to leave his friend behind. But Tony insists, and Rhodey even gets the Wrecker's respect by, he says, you know, he's got guts, I'm going to let him live. But what Curtis actually is up to is he's actually Colin, his brother, and he says, Calvin? You know, okay. Yeah, yep, Calvin. And he says, because Calvin right now is the one that has the chemistro stuff, and so he's like, you know, we need your help. And Calvin says, I can't do that, big brother. I just took a job, and helping Iron Man might be considered a conflict of interest. And we see that the wizard is standing right next to Calvin. So back to the situation, the fight between Iron Man and Calvin, and the Wrecker, and Tony uses like a magnetic charge, so that his suit is repelled by the Wrecker's crowbar. So he goes flying, a whole bunch of cars start flying at the Wrecker and his magnetized crowbar, and meanwhile Tony's repelled all the way across the space that they're fighting and gets like connected to like the trailer truck. So he turns off his he's not able to turn off his magnetic field, but he heats up his armor to the point that the magnetic field decays, and then he drops down. But in so Curtis looks up, he's like real excited that his brother, who's Chemistro now, is shown up. He's like, here comes help. And Chemistro says, you won't be so glad to see me once you find out why I'm here, big brother. I'm here to finish the job that the Wrecker bungled. I'm here to kill Iron Man. Next, without Chemistro, life itself would still be possible. So.
Oh, you know what? The wheelchair stuff, I forgot. He was shot not that long ago by one of his ex-girlfriends, or just basically one of the girls he slept with and then dumped, and then so she shot him in the spine, and he built that company just for that, for prosthetics, right. Because he remembered how he hated being in the chair, and he had a whole thing, a run of when he was in the armor, he could walk, but only when he was in the armor, so he never wanted to be out of the armor.
Gotcha.
So that's probably where that joke came from.
Yeah. Gotcha. That makes sense, yeah. So, yeah, it was cool. I mean, I like this era, you know, just because it's nostalgic for me, and I can't remember if I read this one back in the day or not. The cover looks familiar to me, but I'm not real sure if it was just one that I saw or actually read or not.
It was such a fun thing. I think I was getting, I don't know how I afforded all this stuff, but I think I was buying all the Avenger books, the Spider-Man, I think I got all the X-Men. So I had all the Axe of Vengeance books at one time. Like I had all the single issue Axe of Vengeance books, reading it through.
Must have been while you were eating beans in the corner. Somebody was throwing you money.
It had to be during that time. It had to be, because I'm like, I don't know how I afforded it. Even though there was everything.
It was
like,
all those strange men walking in and out.
It's Auntie Dollar.
Left you some money.
Well, you know, I probably could afford it when they, because all they had to do was leave me about $20.
And that's
when
right.
The books came out, yep. I spent my $20 on all the comics.
Yep.
Like, here, boy.
That was 20 comics.
Stop crying.
$20. Go to the comic shop and get and take that damn sock off your head. What's wrong with you?
That's right.
Fucking ink blocks. What's going on?
Keith really thinks you're Rorschach, man.
He does. He really does.
Here, get some money.
Yeah.
Don't come back for a while.
And then we give me the money, and I'm going to go, I wouldn't even talk because I'd have my mask on. Oh, if only 20. If only comics were a dollar each again.
Oh man.
Yeah, it would be nice. Oh, 60 man. Cents is my favorite time.
Imagine DCBS then. I would get. I would go back to printing comics again if that was the case.
I would just say select all. I buy as many comics as Mike does.
60 cents and then half off of the 60 cents?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, shoot. select. Yeah, I would hit select all. I wouldn't even.
It's like, give me the can of farts and everything.
Just give it to me. Give it to me.
You could even send me the anime from the back of the catalog. I don't care. Just give me everything.
I'm saying, I don't even care. I won't read it, but I don't even care.
I'll sell it.
I'll sell
it. Vicious.
Yeah, I'll give it to him. I don't even care, but I swear I would go crazy. I would read so much stuff. That's how I read all that shit for a dollar.
Yeah.
A dollar an issue. That's how I read it all.
I got one last book, and it's Legends of the DCU. I've already talked about this one, but it's the conclusion. I talked about Legends of the DC Universe issue 1, and then I read 2 and 3 to finish this story by Robinson and Sameeks. Is that how you pronounced it, Chris? I can't remember. His name was Val.
Zemeckis.
I love his art, man. It's awesome. It looks very 90-ish, but it's pretty. I like the way he does it. It's like it's a cross from between John Byrne and Kirby. I don't know. It's weird. But this story took an interesting twist, and if you do your research on it, the link between the previous issue, it's got the Ultra Humanite, and that guy transfers bodies. Well, in the previous issue, there was this guy named Morgan Wilde, and Luther was after his Parkinson formula, and he's basically threatened him, and his goons ended up killing his wife and him, supposedly. But this Morgan Wilde actually is the Ultra Humanite, so it's almost like a retcon of this character that's been around for a while. And even if you Google this, it'll show up on his wiki page that, you know, you Google Morgan Wilde, and he'll show up as the Ultra Humanite, but it's not mentioned anymore. So it's one of those weird little historical things that you don't know if it's kept its presence in the DCU or if it's left. But it's a pretty cool story because you're dealing with Luther and Wilde. It's pretty much a battle between Wilde and Luther. His wife is dead. He managed to survive. He becomes the Ultra Humanite with whatever his Parkinson drug or body transfer experiment was doing. And he seeks revenge against Luther, and the way he seeks revenge against Luther is he has contamination within all of his technology. So Luther's producing products up the wazoo. Everything is falling apart in the public eye. Everybody's saying, we can't buy Luther products anymore. They're not reliable. They break down. And to the point that like construction vehicles or robotic vehicles are actually breaking down and destroying things, and Superman has to stop them. And they're happening in sync with this weird character called Madness, who's kind of like a Joker-looking character. He dresses like Two-Face and crazy hair and crazy eyes, and he causes chaos wherever he goes. He basically turns people mad. That's his power. If you're in the vicinity, you just go nuts. You go ballistic. You like become one of the crossed. And there's a linkage there because he's kind of like working for Wilde, and he's basically as something's happening with Luther's stuff, like a plane crashing or something failing with the technology, Madness is robbing some place across town because he knows Superman will be in the opposite part of town. And him and Lois basically work together to find out the linkage and actually stop him, but they don't actually stop the Ultra Humanite. He might have transferred bodies. But he did transfer bodies into one of Luther's goons, because in the story they make you believe there's five people that the Ultra Humanite could be in, and they work for Luther. And it turns out to be the lead guy that's working with Superman. But he leaves that one character's body, and the Humanite survived and transformed himself into somebody else, and you don't know who that somebody else is, but you see him at the end of the story at the top of a building laughing. And it's a really cool story. It's a 3-issue story arc, and I'm glad I bought this series. This is an interesting done in ones, kind of. Well, actually, done in three issues, but they're really well done.
I like those, like when they would do the one and dones, but they had one thread throughout all of them.
Yeah,
like
and then you start another character because the next arc starts Wonder Woman, and should be pretty cool. It's got like a Steve Rude cover. So, yeah, and this is around the time period. This was from 1998. The comics were $1.95, a little bit more expensive. And you had Underworld Unleashed happening or being collected, and Final Night was happening.
Yeah.
So that's around the time period that that, you know, stuff was going on.
And the world was close to ending.
Yeah.
Pretty
and
much.
The Supermans were those the blue and the red Superman, you know.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That was during Morrison's run on Justice League.
Yeah. Too. So this was like Legends of the Batman, where it took place in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like three issue arcs by various creators, and they took place in different parts of the character's creation, and usually weren't current time. But it was cool. It's cool shit, man.
I remember I jumped into Morrison's JLA, and I didn't know what was going on with Superman comics. So I was, I saw Blue Superman. I was like, I don't know what that's about, but whatever.
He is, and you know what? He did. You know, people complain about it. It's impossible to deal with all the changes and reflect it and do good stories. But I think Morrison did. He reflected every single change in characters. He even couldn't use Hawkman anymore, so he had to use, he made up Azrael, the angel, the fallen angel. He went through, that book went through so much, like there's stuff happening, and it's like, why are you blue now, Superman?
And
don't
it
worry
made
about
sense.
It. Yeah, yeah. It's like,
it was
don't worry
a,
about
a little
it.
Bit different than other Morrison works that are kind of abstract and weird.
No, I think he had an editor. He listened to his editor during this time.
Either that, or he stopped drugs for a short amount of time.
Right, like he chose to. He went on his meds or something. Like, yeah, because this was the closest to continuity I think Morrison has ever been with his Justice League run.
And it's kind of, well, it was like the first time too that he did anything like that, that I think that they were hesitant at, and it was only because, like Mike was talking about earlier with what he covered, that like sales were so bad that they wanted to try something different, that like they gave him the chance. But I mean, one thing about Grant Morrison though is like, he does love, his stuff does come from like a love of superheroes, like, and especially Silver Age DC. So
yeah,
and like, a historical perspective,
as opposed to like maybe like somebody like Warren Ellis or something like that, that like isn't as much of a fan. Like Grant Morrison is definitely a fan of superheroes.
I always feel like people that really are angry, like it sounds like they're angry about what Morrison does, it's more of because of the stick that he does. You know, he goes throws through the whole thing of the sigils and the whole. And I think if you pay too much attention to, it's one of those times when knowing too much about the background of the creative team hurts your enjoyment of something.
Yeah.
And as opposed to just reading it, if you don't like it when you read it, you don't like it. But
right.
But automatically, when you, as soon as people hear the name, like Multivicity, as soon as people hear the name, now if they had just said it's just a book where every they introduce. He does it's like Legends, where he's going to do a different story. Each world gets one-shot story, but there is a common link throughout all of them, but they're just a bunch of one-shots.
It's kind of like Seven Soldiers, what he did with that. It was two bookends and then a bunch of like,
right.
Oh, here's Frankenstein, here's Clarion, here's Shining Knight, here's this.
Mm-hmm. And that's been done for years. That's nothing new in terms of DC Comics or whatever. They've done that for eons. But as soon as you hear that, the first thing I hear is, oh, Grant Morrison again is going to be shit I can't understand. And it's like, you haven't even read it yet. Why are you angry? It's not even something that you have to read.
You don't even have to read it.
Yeah, it's not in continuity where you have to read it to get to deal with the other books. But I think he brings a baggage just by hearing his name. That
I think it's important when you read a Morrison book that you read it when you're ready to think. In other words, you don't read it when you're almost passed out in bed.
No.
Do you know what I mean? You have to read it when you're wide awake and ready to absorb.
He's like Hickman for me. He's like Hickman also. Hickman writes like that too. Like he includes details and stuff in it that if you miss it, you might miss the whole point. You might miss the whole point of it, and it can be off-putting for people. Like it'll just sometimes just turn people off. He writes along, is you know that type of style.
I think their styles are similar, except Hickman's more grounded. In other words, he doesn't go all crazy ass.
To a point, because his time right now, what he's doing with Avengers, I like it, but I could see it being a turnoff to people that don't want to bother with it. Like his time travel right now with the Avengers is out there, like it's really out there.
Yeah, he's. He's not my favorite on Avengers. I love just Fantastic Four.
But, yeah, I mean, I do see what you're saying, though, as far as, like, the style. Like, neither one of them, I noticed, they won't tell you something three times. Like, if you miss it when they told you it once, if you are scanning the dialogue or you're not really paying attention, like, right. They're not going to, like, hit you over the head with something multiple times. Like, you either pay attention or you get lost, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think that's the difference with Bendis on Avengers is a lot more people love that run, but he wrote it towards for people that... I think he did every arc so that people can come into it if they didn't read the other stuff. He didn't go too deep in the continuity that it would turn people off. And I think that's what made it help to make it even more popular than other runs of Avengers, which, you know, because it's different styles. I've read it all, read Avengers for so many years that I love the jumping in and celebrating that, you know, all that continuity, but I understand people not wanting to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I can deal with both styles. It's just like you said, it's different styles. Mm-hmm. As long as it's like good stories, you know. But
all right,
okay,
we can wrap this guy up.
Yeah, I'll mention another sort of feedback that we got. That we talked actually before about, Mike, you mentioned Brian Regate. He wrote in, and you mentioned that he has a podcast. I think it was the last time we recorded. I went ahead and checked it out. It's called Comics and History. You mentioned that, like, you can listen to it on the Spreaker.com or Spreaker app. Which is kind of like a streaming Stitcher kind of thing. I did randomly discover that it is on iTunes, but it's not under Comics and History for whatever reason. It's under his name. If you search for his name, which is Brian with a Y instead of an I, and Regate is REIGATE. But it's a pretty cool show. I've been listening to it. If you like this show, it's like, you know, shorter. It's a solo podcast, like 30 minutes or so. But he did like a series of a whole bunch of episodes on Zero Hour. And then he's been doing recently like an overview of Guy Gardner throughout the years. But there's a Facebook page if you search for Comics and History. But he did a shout out to us on one of his episodes recently. Did like a really nice kind of description of Retrocast, and also on the Comics and History website on Facebook, he said, I'd like to give a great big word of thanks to Mike Myers and Chris Ivey of the Geek Brunch Retrocast for giving a shout out to Comics and History during their latest episode. I've said it before and I'll say it again, Geek Brunch Retro is really worth listening to. So that was nice of him.
Talked about ass and pooping for about an hour.
Yeah, Mike, you're going to get fired. You're going to get fired from another podcast.
Yeah, he probably won't actually get to this point to hear this because of the barrier of the first hour.
You want to fire yourself for the next episode?
I just peeked through the stall and saw a bush of pubic hair.
You can yell at yourself. You're fired.
Yeah, I'm actually Buck Rogers' duplicate, so the real one will be back next time.
Next time, I'll fire myself. In the
too
next
much
dance.
Bush. Too much Bush.
And can't unsee it.
See all that Bush. All that man Bush.
Man Bush.
Well, you can reach us at www.geekcrunchpodcast.com.
And on the Twitters, at MythMakingETC, at Mike Myers Brunch, at The Voice 123, Geek Brunch on Geek Brunch Podcast on Facebook, and leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks to William, who left us the whole Geek Brunch network.
Yeah, that was. I'm glad you mentioned.
Really
that.
Awesome.
That was a good
iTunes
good write up.
Thank you to William,
podcasts
regular listener. I think that's it. Oh, email mythmakingetc@gmail.com. Mike
at comicbooknoise.com. Mike at Daryl at comicbooknoise.com.
Do we check emails?
I do. That's how we found out the email from Brian, actually. He sent email. I don't usually get email. But
it's no. Usually Titans.
And some comes in there.
And Baltimore emails. It's usually from Baltimore Comic
Con. Or it's usually email on DC Noise saying, why don't you guys talk about DC Comics? I don't understand. You got a DC podcast.
I don't understand.
Talk about DC Comics.
I listened to 5 hours and I
you
don't
talked
understand.
About a documentary about a cave.
What does Netflix have to do with DC Comics? I don't understand. I'm going to listen to 20 more shows, and after that, I am done with you all. You do not listen to DC Comics. I love those messages.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite.
All right. Well, you guys have a good weekend.
All right. You too.
And I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you.
Adios,
chachos.
Bye-bye.
Bye.